Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 94 of the Savage and Christ Sports Podcast. One more closer to 100 on Wednesday night, as usual, 7:31 p.m. Plenty to talk about. Not, you know, as many sports as we're typically used to, but we're centering in on hockey and basketball tonight, with the Bruins and the Celtics being the primary points of discussion. Jersey numbers for this week, as we, you know, run out of jersey numbers, we're not going to have these forever anymore. We got Dolir Hinojosa, a guy in the Celtics I did not know ever existed.
No, no, that, wait, even
that,
is.
That is in the Celtics. Wrong team.
No, it can't be.
Red Sox.
Still wouldn't have guessed the Red Sox. I would have guessed that was a Patriot.
Yeah, I don't remember this guy. Evan Fournier, the recent Celtic, only one to wear number 94. Mm-hmm. Henry Anderson currently for the Patriots. Adrian Claiborne and the best for last, Ty Warren. You know, can't forget Ty Warren, absolute beast in his day with the Patriots. Rocking number 94, the picture attached to our tweet letting you know earlier that we were going live around this time tonight. Ryan, what's up? How you feeling?
Crappy. I think I either have a strep throat or some sort of, like, allergies or something. I know for a fact it's not COVID. I tested 3 days in a row, so it's definitely not that. All negative, so that's good. But other than that, little strained voice, but we'll get through it. We fight through it like we always do. Not terrible, but I'll survive. How about you? How are you doing?
I'm good. My allergies are finally contained somewhat.
That's good. We're going in opposite directions.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm good. You know, things aren't great for the Bruins, not going to lie. Hopefully the Celtics can win tonight. But, you know, just, you know, when you go through adversity, you got to ask yourself if you're hurt or injured and just power through sometimes. And
it's true.
You know, that's just life. That's life, baby. Moments of the week. You are going to go first, as some of my points will segue us into hockey better than yours, which is a bit of news we sort of expected, but not specifically like this.
Mm-hmm. I, for the first time, decided to go with more so a moment of the week than a dickhead behavior of the week or anything like that. But I think it goes without saying, you know, obviously kind of a little bit of a surprise that this came out, like you said, as recent as it did. But Tom Brady's new Fox deal, which will pay him $375 million over 10 years whenever he decides to retire. I would have to think with this out there now, that's probably going to be sooner rather than later, like maybe within the next couple of years, or I don't know how much longer he has on his Bucks contract. But yeah, very surprising. I mean, I was a little, was, for lack of a better term, surprised when it came out. Didn't think this was going to happen as fast as it did. He'll join, I believe it's Kevin Burkhardt on the Fox broadcast. So he'll be Fox as their lead NFL analyst this year. A lot of the broadcast crews are getting switched around with, you know, different streaming services coming up and stuff like that. I know Buck's going to Monday Night Football, right? Or Sunday Night Football. One of the, he's doing something. So they obviously need a new guy there. Like I said, very surprising. I think a lot of people now are asking the question, you know, is this going to be a good fit for Tom Brady? Because as much as we like Tom Brady, he's a little vanilla at times. Like, I don't, he's not the, I don't know, you know, the biggest outspoken personality, I guess. So this may be a transition for him. How do you feel about this? I'm kind of torn. Like, I mean, it's Tom Brady. He's, but pretty much good at everything. He's obviously the go-to football. I don't think he's going to be terrible in this spot. I think it'll be maybe what we saw a little bit with Romo at his start. Like, there was a little bit of some uncertainty. You know, there was some kinks that needed to be worked out a little bit, but I really don't know how to feel about this. Like, I want to root for Brady. I want to say he's going to be good, but then, like, personality wise, he's just not that, like, I feel like outspoken of a guy, and I mean, maybe it'll be a strange transition for him.
I think he's going to become that outspoken guy, to be honest. I think we've kind of seen his personality, like, come to the forefront over time, you know, whatever you want to say, like, whatever he tweets, you know, you could pick, you know, different tweets, whatever strikes a chord with you, you know, the whole avocado tequila thing, whatever, you know, letting loose the parade, you know, he's getting older. I think he's going to become like this, like, kind of witty, whether it land, the wittiness lands or not, announcer. Obviously he's got, you know, tons of experience playing the game and, you know, learning from people and, you know, playing against, with, meeting just like studs of the game. As I remember to pull up the Twitter chat here, I think he's gonna be fine, and like, he got a significant bag. Like, I don't know if he's gonna be the highest, most, the highest paid announcer in the world, because the one thing I think about is soccer. Like, soccer is massively popular in certain parts of the world, and some players get like a bazillion dollars in their contracts. So like, yep. I don't know what the announcers get. That could be more than what Brady's getting in this deal, but I don't know. So I'm not going to say he's like outright say he's the most, he's going to be the highest paid like announcer in the world when that time comes.
I'm not 100%.
If he is.
Yeah. I mean, but it blows. I mean,
they're going to find ways to, you know, have him say corny stuff. He's going to find ways to say corny stuff. Yep. Like, it's not going to be perfect, but I'm excited about it. Like, it's going to be interesting. Obviously, I love the guy. That'll never change. And yeah, it's going to bring something new and it's going to piss people off, which is funny.
Yep.
You know, people that hate him.
He just won't go away, even when he retires, whenever that might be.
He won't go away. Like, I'll be honest, this too, like about his playing career, I wouldn't be surprised if he retires regardless of what happens this season and then does the same exact thing. He's like, all right, I want to keep playing. Just kidding. Like, I still don't want to stop playing. Like, he's never going to go away. He's never going to go away from the game. And I love it because it just, the fact that it pisses people off is funny to me. It doesn't piss me off because I love him. But I don't know. It's going to be an interesting experience. I'm not going to lie to you. And it could, you know, be massively successful. I don't think there's, you know, anyone fully doubting that. I think is looking at this in kind of a short-sighted way.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. I mean, I feel it with the timing of this and everything that's already happened this offseason with Brady, somebody somewhere has to know that. I mean, he has, I feel like, had to have let it slip to somebody at Fox that, you know, I'm probably done after a year or two, so let's get this done now. Like, this isn't, I feel like, something that comes out if Brady's going to play 4 or 5 more years. Like, that would be dumb to be sitting on this and then have him go into it. And like I said, 5 years down the line, then he signs this, officially signs this 10-year contract. So, like, I don't know. Like I said, I think the end for Brady and his playing career is going to be sooner rather than later. Again, we thought that this offseason, look what he did. I just find it funny, too, that already, you know, with this $375 million contract, when that comes to be, you know, he's has the possibility to surpass in one signing what he's made of his entire NFL career of $333 million. That's just ridiculous. So that alone is why I have him as a tier five. Like I said, on the good side of things, just like an absolute power move going from the go to football, playing it to now, I don't know, let's not, I'm not going to, you know, jump the shark or anything and say, you know, he's going to be the goat of broadcasting because there's a lengthy, you know, list of guys that are going to be ahead of Tom Brady. But like, just like I said, power move, the fact that he's going to get paid way more than Tony Romo, who I like. I know you and I have differing opinions on Romo. I still think he's good. You do not. I found that funny. Like, if you're sitting there as Tony Romo, who, you know, has some experience doing this now, to sit there and go, well, crap. And that's the thing I saw too. There's some people that are like, you know, how is Brady getting this much money when he hasn't had any sort of, I guess, training in this or any sort of, you know, background in this? But it's Brady. That's
seriously like, asking that is just not.
Just look at who it is. Yeah, that's why I was like, why is everyone surprised by this?
It's like, the name. It's the legacy.
Exactly.
It's the star power. Like,
that's why Drew Brees got a deal done so quick. Like,
who cares? Like, it's Tom Brady. Like, it's as simple as that. Yeah, it's going to be something. It's going to be something, let me tell you.
You think he lasts the full 10 years? I heard Felger and Maz discussing this. They put the over under at 2.5. That,
yeah, I think to bet on that. The 10 years. I don't know. I think Brady's going to really like it. Is Giselle gonna, like, I think she has to be somewhat cool with this, and $375 million is hard to pass up on.
That's a hard thing to say no to.
Stupid loaded. I mean, she can just go to the games and chill. Like, she doesn't have to, I feel like she doesn't
hang on the back of the booth.
She doesn't have to travel to every game. Like, she's not as committed to it as she would be Brady as, you know, watching Brady as a player, I'd imagine. That would just be kind of odd to me, but I, you know, I'd get it, but it makes more sense to, you know, be more committed to him when he's playing. In terms of, you know, being by his side at the, you know, broadcasting points of his career, not like, you know, staying beside him in their relationship. Like, I don't think their relationship should suffer, but
no, I don't think it will. No.
If that were a concern to them too, I don't think you would have done it because, you know, it is a lot of money, but they have a lot of money. Like,
it's I think, they are.
He needs this.
Yeah. They are fully set for 3 or 4 lifetimes.
Yeah. Maybe more. Yeah. It's interesting. I'm looking forward to see how it goes. Like, if I were to pick right now for his career too, I think he plays this year and is officially done. But like I said, if he, you know, retired and decided to come back again, I would not be surprised. A little surprised, I'll say, but not really. But I'm excited for this. I am.
Absolutely. I don't know how you can't be. I
love that he just sticks around. He finds a way to stick around. He sticks it. Yep. You know, I think that has to be in the back of his mind with his retirement. Like, haha, all the idiots who doubted me thought I was done. Just kidding. Classic prank.
Coming back.
Coming back. Suck it. It's pretty.
That's the one. The one thing, too, and the kind of the closing thought I have is I'm interested to see, because like we said, we've joked about, you know, the retiring and coming back. And this is something that's been discussed, too, is, you know, is will Brady, again, bringing up the Felbert Mad stuff, I think Zolak and Bertrand talked about it, too. You know, after a couple of years, will he be sitting there going, like, I can still do this just as good as these quarterbacks that I'm watching right now. So maybe he steps away then and tries to come back a couple of years down the line. So that's something to keep an eye on, too. I'm curious, like I said, to see if he'll be, you know, critical of the big name guys and, like, saying if they have a Green Bay Packers game and let's just say a Chiefs game, if he'll sit there, you know, kind of talk about, like, oh, I would have done this over Aaron Rodgers, or I would have, you know, played this a little differently than Patrick Mahomes, or if in the first year he'll kind of, you know, just, I don't know, skate by or like not be as maybe harsh on some guys compared to others.
Trevor Story.
Hit a home run?
Number one, dead center.
Nice.
Finally, good to
see him going.
He's heating up. He had two RBIs last night, if I'm not mistaken, too. Heating up.
He did. Two hits, two RBIs, hit a bullet. Very nice.
Red Sox back, question mark. Rafael maybe Devers hitting home runs.
Grand Salami last night.
Which is dope.
Yep.
Red Sox back, question mark. We'll see.
Let's hope.
We'll see. So you're giving that a tier what on the awesomeness scale, we'll call it here?
A tier five. Like I said, absolute power move going from the best to play the game to now right into the booth whenever that may be and getting paid a ridiculous amount of money to do so.
Yeah, good luck getting rid of him. That's all.
Yeah.
Good luck getting rid of him.
Nope.
Yeah, on to mine, though. I got a little bit of both in terms of moments of the week, positive and negative. To start, like, Predators fans that are clearly salty that they got swept. You know, hurts that they're missing their starting goalie, but they got swept. You know, it sucks for Connor Ingram. I feel bad for him. He did all he could, but they're just outmatched. That's how it is. Predators fans throwing Skittles at Cale Makar, dude. Like, I mean, really? Like,
I don't understand
those Skittles
it.
Skittles probably cost like $14. Like,
oh, probably, yeah.
I mean, they're Skittles, but like, come on. Like, are you serious? Like, I
never wasn't in the Marshawn Lynch type of throwing Skittles way either. This was like, as you were talking to me before we started, like, this was derogatory throwing of Skittles, not like, hey, Cale Makar likes Skittles, let's give him some.
Yeah, like, in Makar, you know, he's a very stand-up professional person, you know. He's, you know, the best player in the league right now too, with how good he's been playing in the playoffs, and he just shrugs it off and he plays really professional. He could have been like, oh, this guy's a dickhead, like, you know, ban this guy from the rink. I can't believe he did that to me. But like, he's just kind of like whatever, you know, he's not letting it bother him too much. Like, you're throwing Skittles on the ice, dude. Like,
it's a little so corny, a little childish.
So stupid. Like, I never knew Nashville fans to be like that. I don't think as a whole they're like that. I think they're some of the best fans.
One off thing.
That arena is a bucket list place for me to go for a playoff game someday. I will accomplish that mission. It's right at the top. But I mean, come on, dude. Like, it might have just been one guy. I think it was just one guy. Like, you gotta consider the idea of a normal one a little more,
just a little bit.
And
yeah,
the thought of such a thing clearly was not on this person's mind during the game, and you know, that's a shame. But it's just really dumb. That's a tier five for me, because like, it's just really, really stupid and childish. Really dumb. Speaking of things that are really dumb in a different sense, I'm not sure what Darnell Nurse was thinking last night in game five. You're already in a tough spot. You know, the Kings are giving you more of a series than you thought you would. You know your importance to the team. He's the best defenseman on the Oilers. And he goes and just very blatantly headbutts Philip Deneau. Could have hurt him pretty bad. Could have concussed him. Who knows? You know, you never know. And he costs his team. Like, you're down in the series now to a team you should be beating that's missing their top defenseman for the rest of the season. And now you're screwing your team. Like,
he suspended a game too, didn't he? I thought I saw that today. Yep, I saw that.
He could have gotten the rest of the first round if it were to go seven games.
They wanted to,
one of those situations, like, however long the rest of the first round lasts, in this case, two max.
Yep.
I think that would have been fine. because this is just dumb.
Like, yeah, I saw the video.
It's the playoffs, and you can be like, oh, you know, it's the playoffs, so we're not going to lay the hammer down too hard. But, like, dude, like, this is really dumb and, like, a really, like, barbaric thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's super avoidable. It's a heat-of-the-moment thing. I get it, but it doesn't justify it. And it's really dumb from a guy that, you know, I wouldn't expect to do something like this. Mm-hmm. Darnell Nurse is a fine player. He doesn't, you know, scream, like, hothead to me or anything. He's a great player. He's a very important player to the Oilers, and he screws them. This could be a huge, huge gaping hole on the back end of their blue line, and they could lose in six games to a team they really should have beat, a team that has the two of the top players in the world that, ironically enough, because Ken Holland is just such a bad GM, has an 84-year-old goalie in net. Like, you don't, like, if you don't see what's wrong with that, if you're Ken Holland, you're just really stupid, and Ken Holland is really stupid, so it connects.
It all checks out.
Dude, being an Oilers fan has to be absolutely mind-numbing.
Like, it's got
to
be a headache.
I wouldn't be able to do it. I thought it was going to be different this year. I had the slightest inkling that the Kings could pull off an upset here, but it really wasn't much.
Mm.
And they're going to screw this. I think they're going to lose in the first round. I don't think they win the next
Edmonton. Two games.
I think they're done. They're going to lose to a team without Drew Doughty.
That's pretty bad.
Really, you know, was up and down in terms of their playoff, you know, legitimacy, like, of getting in. That Pacific Division was a roller coaster for good chunks of the season. They could have easily missed the playoffs if things went a little differently. And they're looking at beating Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in the first round. Like, something serious needs to change in Edmonton.
Mm-hmm. I said it a couple weeks ago.
Draisaitl has gone through one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm requesting a trade if I'm Draisaitl. Like, after this year, like, if they don't win the first round, I'm requesting a trade from Draisaitl, because he is so effortlessly good. He can be a franchise player outside of McDavid. I'm not saying he should request a trade because he wants to be away from McDavid or whatever. Mm-hmm. This is a team that's got – they played amazing once they changed coaches to Jay Woodcroft. And they're still going to screw this up because of just things not going right that are avoidable in the playoffs. Like, I would be so maddened by this if I'm a fan, a player. Like, this can't happen. It just it can't. And for a team that's rallying, as it segues, you know, I'll get into it in a second. You know, one of the best stories, if not the best story in the league this year, with Ben Stelter, you know, pretty much becoming a part of the Oilers. And you're screwing this up by making a dumb move. If you're Nurse, and, you know, you're putting your team in jeopardy of losing in the first round, it's really a shame. And it bothers me from a common sense standpoint for an organization that should be a favorite in the Western Conference every year, and they aren't, because of this uncertainty, because of something that happens every year. They lost in the first round last year. It's mind-boggling. It is and it isn't. But it's truly a spectacle in, like, the strangest and weirdest way in the league. Mm-hmm.
Oh, the one thing I was going to say is, I think I said this when we were doing our playoff preview, is that McDavid's slowly becoming, or especially if they lose this year, it's like it's another Mike Trout situation. Like, he's the Mike Trout of the NHL. And it's, again, that's not a to crap on Mike Trout or anything, but it's a very similar situation where you have now the Angels are obviously playing good this year. They're leading that division, so maybe things will turn around for them. But it's kind of been the same thing, that a team that has added a ton of talent has a obviously arguably the best player in the league on it. And that goes even more hand in hand now with Ohtani on the Angels and with Draisaitl with Edmonton. Like, it's two very similar, obviously different sports, but very similar situations where you have these two big teams that just year after year disappoint. I said it might be a headache to be an Oilers fan. I feel like you said, frustration if you're a fan, but to some degree too, it's like, it's almost like, all right, well, I don't want to say you expect this to happen if you're an Oilers fan, but, like, there's got to be people that are like, we're going to get in the playoffs and have something up. And they're again, not, like you said, year after year, it happens.
They're not delusional fans like the Maple Leafs. They don't, you know, see this type of stuff happen to them. They're like, oh, like, it's going to be fine. It's going to be different this year.
It's a one-off thing, yeah.
There are Edmonton fans out there, and I'm sure there are Leafs fans too, but they don't show up as, you know, as noticeably as the crazy obnoxious ones that expect them to win the cup every year, finally win a freaking playoff round to start.
Series, yeah.
Yep. Expect them to sign a player for like $11 million when they have negative $14 in cap space. Like, It's sad, and I do feel bad for Edmonton fans, but like it also kind of makes me have disdain for the organization that like they can't figure this out. And
yeah, Ken Holland, absolutely.
Like if Ken Holland, I'm not going to say I hate the Edmonton Oilers organization overall, but if they don't fire Ken Holland after this, like,
you hate how they operate.
Because it is Ken Holland's incompetence dates back to his final years with the Detroit Red Wings before he got fired and hired by the Oilers to replace Peter Chiarelli, ironically enough. He has had a downward spiral in his decision making for a long time. You could say 6-7 years, maybe longer. This is not new. And dude, I'm losing my mind if I'm an Edmonton fan or player right now. Like
I don't know how you can't be.
You have to just set the record straight and speed bag the King somehow.
Without your best defenseman, arguably, without your the best next game.
He is their best defenseman.
Yep.
It's just crazy. It's a tier five. It's really dumb by Nurse. There's so much going on with that organization. But on the flip side with the Oilers, you know, they aren't doing everything wrong. I'm just gonna come out and say it, the best story this year. With Ben Stelter. For anybody who doesn't know who Ben is, he's been around the team, I believe, since February, like late February, late March. Ben has battled glioblastoma, which is a form of brain cancer, for the past year. He's gone through 4 rounds of chemotherapy, 30 sessions of radiation to remove it, and the tumor returned in December 2021. Ben has been a beacon of positivity for the Oilers. He's been around the team. They love him. He's just like – he like can bring a tear to your eye just looking at him. He's so He's going through a lot, and he brings this positive light to the organization. He truly loves the Oilers. There's nothing to not like about what they're doing for him and what he's doing for the team, because the team has rallied around him. I think once he started going to games, they went on like an 8-game home winning streak with him at the games.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a coincidence.
Absolutely not.
The story with Ben is incredible, and it got even better when, you know, for a kid that's battling so much and, you know, there's so much we don't know about his life behind the scenes, they hooked him up with an upper set, you know, there's multiple cards, upper deck hockey cards, and the biggest one is, you know, a bigger size card, probably about, like, this big. Of him and McDavid on the ice, signed by every single member of the Oilers.
That's pretty cool.
Surprised him with the card. He's got like handhelds, you know, normal size cards as well. It's awesome. Like, it's awesome. It's really heartwarming to see when, you know, organizations do these types of things for people. And it was so cool to see. I saw it on my LinkedIn feed when I went on one day, and you know, things aren't going perfectly for the Oilers all around, but to see them, how well they've handled the whole situation with Ben and made his life, you know, made his life better. Like, he's going through a lot, and they've done what they can and worked so hard to improve the quality of his life and make his life enjoyable and help him be close to a team that he clearly loves. And that's awesome. Like,
absolutely.
It's a tier five. It's the best story in the NHL this season, and I love it so much. And, you know, on behalf of both of us, I can say safely, we hope the best for Ben. We hope things, you know, turn around, and he can continue going to Oilers games for a long time. It's just an incredible story. And like I said, we wish the best for Ben.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's quite the story. And, if you go to the upperdeckblog.com and want to see this story for yourself and you want to find the video somehow, I encourage you to go ahead and do it. Because it's awesome and it'll guaranteed bring a smile to your face. But that's tier five. It's so awesome. And, we're hoping the best for Ben going forward. And, that's going to wrap it up for moments of the week as we segue into a different side of the hockey talk with the Bruins.
Probably more negative, to say the least.
We're starting off positive. As the Capitals take it, work our way there. My Stanley Cup champion prediction, Panthers. Sweats. not feeling great about it right now. Not going to lie to you.
None of our picks are doing well, I don't think.
No. I said it before, like, this is going to be the year Colorado wins because I didn't pick them.
Nope.
Game 3 versus Carolina. Rivals, June 15, 2011 is the best night of my life. I knew it was going to be fun. You know, win or lose, I was going to have a good time. And they won. They set the tone. They turned things around. I had so much fun. Shout out to Matt. He's not listening right now because he's at the Celtics game. But ooh, me and Matt went. Our buddy, friend of the program, Mike McClellan, was at the game as well with his girlfriend and some family. So we're all around the same area, you know, intentionally tried to get tickets all near each other. Mm-hmm. And it was a blast. It was a ton of fun. Matt got to meet, you know, Truck and his family. That was cool. And we just had a blast together. It was a ton of fun. The Bruins won. You know, I remember saying after the Celtics game I went to, you know, I expected the building to be louder. And the Bruins, I knew I was going to go to a Bruins game this year. I wanted to. It was going to be louder, and it was. That place is insane during a Bruins game. I'm so happy I got to go to the first home playoff game of the year. It was just incredible. And the win makes it obviously a lot better. All righty. Let's get into it. This is where things turned around, or started to.
Started to, yeah. Looked like they were going to.
Jeremy Swayman gets the nod. What were you saying?
I was just going to say, so much has happened with this team. I honestly forgot that you went to this game. Like, I feel like the last three games they've played have been, like, weeks apart, which is how, like, drastic the game three – the game. I mean, every game it seemed like was different performance-wise. Like, game four was a blowout, but, like, game three was well-fought. Game four, you know, they kind of dominated. And then last night that we'll get to later, like, three very different feeling games, I feel like.
Yeah, I'll get to it more and more as we move along here. And I'm sure you will as well. There's too much going on in this series. There's too much. And we'll elaborate on that as we go along. But game three first, Jeremy Swayman is asked to step up, and he does. 25 saves and 27 shots. Bruins outshot the Canes 20-27. Chris Wagner slotted in for Trent Frederick, which I liked the move.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good move. Worked out well.
Yeah, I mean, Wagner, you know, he doesn't look like a showstopper fourth liner, but he's doing fine. I think, you know, as we can see now, I think they did this on purpose with him in the minors. They, you know, bring him back up for the playoffs because he's a proven commodity. And it's working fine. I really don't have any problems with Wagner and how he's played since getting back into the mix. And I'm happy for him because he's such an easy guy to root for. To start, I mean, it wasn't great. Swayman got bamboozled on the Trocheck goal. Everything kind of happened fast. You know, I'm not really going to throw blame around too much on this one. It was just a tough goal. It happened fast. You know, Swayman, as you can see by the replay, got frozen a little bit there. You know, it's going to happen, unfortunately. It happens to be for the first goal of the game. But, of course, for just the sake of the hockey being weird sometimes, of course, the scoring gets started on a shorthanded goal from Jake DeBrusque and Charlie Coyle. Jake DeBrusque, man, I did not see the evolution of Jake DeBrusque as a penalty killer happening this year, but it makes sense. He's fast. He's more engaged this year. It works. It boosts his trade value, too. You know,
absolutely.
Whatever ends up happening with him in the offseason. I love it, though. I mean, the place went nuts. It was a great goal. It was a classic, like, Charlie Coyle type of goal when he gets these odd man rushes. I feel like so many of them look identical. And, yeah, it was, you know, good heads-up hockey from DeBrusque, and they buried it. You know, it was a timely goal. No complaints. Love it. They go to a broken playoff shot from Bergeron. Marchand picks it up and buries it. Huge goal for him. Huge goal to get him activated. You know, it was the first game in a while you felt like Marchand was Marchand. Weak defense from Carolina, and the Bruins capitalize on it. Huge, huge, huge goal. Wearing my Marchand jersey to the game, it was nice to see him score. Yeah, there were some weird moments in this game. Like, one moment I thought was strange was when Clifton went to the box for a hit from behind, Brandon Smith kind of turned into. They called that instead of Wagner punching someone in the face. Which was really strange to me. It just kind of goes hand in hand into the weird officiating and often bad officiating we've seen throughout the series.
And, yep.
Yeah, it was strange. Did you pick up on how weird that was watching the game or following along, or was I one of few? Because
not really. I think you might have been on an island with that one.
Dude, like, just... I mean, the call on Clifton was reasonable, but to me, the more, you know, likely thing you should call a penalty for there is Wagner just punching someone in the face.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. They're officiating
immediately.
Well, that's why, like, not to spoil, like, the argument, like, you and I are going to differ, especially from the last game on just the officiating, because I feel like the officiating as a whole in the series has been lackluster and iffy at times. So, like, if both teams have gotten bad calls both their way. I mean, it's just been such a – you're seeing it. We've kind of – it's funny that it's happening with the Celtics series as well. Like, both these series going on right now, the officiating's been ticky-tacky at times. They haven't called things at other times. Like, it's – like, so that's why I don't – I like, even last night, again, to spoil it, I really – there were some calls that were dumb, but I mean, like to me, it more so, and like I said, jumping ahead here, like it more so falls on like killing these penalties off when you get them and stuff like that. But I don't know. I just really haven't. I know there's been other people that have been up in arms about this type of stuff, but the way these games have gone, like it's not, it hasn't affected me too much. Maybe that's because I'm not just like maybe as involved or paying attention as much as other people. Like I've been more invested in the crappy calls in the Celtics game series than anything else, but I can see where people are getting aggravated and where I'm sure your argument's going to go. Especially with last night's game when we get to that.
Yeah, man. Like I said earlier, there's too much going on in this series. And it's not going how it could be, which I think would benefit both sides, you know, depending on, you know, who takes advantage of what opportunities. To the point where things aren't being overshadowed by the refs so much.
Yep. I would agree with that. At the times, the referee's kind of become the ref show. Throughout this series, which like nobody wants to see it, especially in playoff like that. That's in a regular season game. That's more understandable. But like the fact that it's a playoff series, like, come on, like, there's times where you should be swallowing the whistle.
Yeah, it's brutal. But like I said, we'll get to that a little later. Speaking of Charlie Coyle earlier on the Pastrnak goal, underrated moment there is Charlie Coyle staking into the slot, taking Ian Cole. Oh my God, I'm thinking throwbacks. So the 2009 Penguins and Hurricanes, like that era of time. Ian Cole, taking him out of the play, you know, getting a stick, you know, crossed up with his, flustering Cole a little bit, giving Marchand an easier path to finding Pastrnak, who wires it. Pascal Chekhov, nice calculated shot by Pastrnak, another goal where the place just went absolute bananas. A huge, 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 massive goal. Gives him a 2-goal lead. Something they're just not used to having in this series. Scoring
playing the power from ahead, play.
Scoring the power play, not something
not used to that either. Doing. Nope.
A lot of things change in this game. And Taylor Hall and David Pastrnak built on it. They built on it. This was just like this was the type of stuff you're hoping for from Taylor Hall when, you know, I remember everybody was getting so excited, myself included, about, you know, what Taylor Hall is capable of when they traded for him. This is the type of stuff he can do. The head fake gets the pass through. Stahl can't make a play. So he kind of like pouts a little bit for a half second. Then he's like, oh crap. Like I need to make the play.
And keep going.
Cause he got like a little down on himself there for a second. Hall gets it back from Pastrnak, buries it. Great play all around. Just the dagger. I really wasn't nervous at all with, you know, segueing into the next point, the Slavin goal. It really didn't fluster me that much because I felt confident. I felt the energy shift. Bruins took a page out of Jaylen Brown's book and shifted the series.
Yep.
Momentarily at least, but they shifted the series. I was going to say
what we thought so. Yep.
It's undeniable that they shifted the series with this game at the time. You needed guys to step up to that you don't, you know, always rely on as top players on your team. And you got guys that stepped up in this game. Derek Forbort, 9 shot blocks.
He was phenomenal in this game. Like, as much as we crapped on Forbort this season, like, this was his best game in a Bruins uniform by far.
Dude, like, nails. Absolute nails. These are the performances you need. 2 shot blocks away from an NHL playoff record. Anton Bolchenkov with the Senators. Had 11 shot blocks in one game twice with the Senators. And David Savard, not too long ago, had 11 in one game as well. Huge performance from Derek Forbath, the guy with the funny Instagram. What a performance. Mike Riley steps in.
He was good too, I thought, in this game.
He was good, and he didn't take a penalty.
That's a plus.
That streak didn't last. We'll talk about it later, but he didn't take a penalty, and he played good. He was more assertive. He didn't terrify me when he didn't have the puck.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good. It was good. It's what you wanted from Mike Riley, and you got it,
mm-hmm.
which is big because they needed to win this game, and they did. And getting guys like him and Forbert and other players at times to step up was huge. Jeremy Swayman stepped up. He was ready for it. It was good. It was good. You know, the Slavin goal was a little soft for Swayman. I think he should have had it. I think he got thrown off by it somehow. But overall, really good game. You're not going to really complain about the goalie too much when you're winning 4-2 in a huge, massive, pivotal game. They carried the momentum into Mother's Day. Happy belated Mother's Day to our moms.
Yep, absolutely. 100%. No, the one thing I was going to say about game three was kind of, I mean, the game as a whole was kind of a microcosm. Not good with cosm, thank you. Of everything that kind of went wrong in those first two games in Carolina. Like, they couldn't, you said it, couldn't score on the power play. They couldn't stop Carolina's power play. You get a shorthanded goal in this one. You get, like you said, two power play goals. Your top line back together for the first time fully. I know they switched the lines around, maybe more so towards the, you know, the second period, maybe the third period of game two. You saw them back together for the first time. That worked out well. And like you said, you got some secondary scoring from Coyle and Hall, which was good to see. So a little bit of everything in that game. And then Swayman, obviously, like you and I both agreed going into this game, it was time for a goalie change. You know, Omark didn't play all that bad, but they needed something. They needed some sort of shot in the arm. And Swayman, was he phenomenal? No. I mean, he was good. But he gave you that jolt of energy that they needed. And obviously it worked out well for him. And this was like, I mean, I know obviously they scored more in the next game, but like this game, I feel like they kind of not dominated, but were more so like this was probably their best complete effort in the series so far.
Yeah, I think you can make the case. And Swayman, it's a huge milestone for him too.
Absolutely. Yeah, too. First playoff win. Yep.
You know, you can win a game. You can win a game in a blowout for your first game.
Mm-hmm. Win's a win.
You outplayed Carolina pretty good for the majority of the game, but I mean, it's not like they smoked him. And Swayman showed up. He made timely saves. He wasn't making highlight reel saves all over the place, but he got it done. And that's all you can really ask for at the very least.
Absolutely.
In a win here. And he gave it to them. And it's really inspiring for his future. He's getting, you know, the playoff experience that I have, you know, been coveting and hoping for him this year, no matter how far they are to go in the playoffs. On to game four, 5-2 instead of 4-2, ties the series up. Carolina scores first again. It's been a weird
theme of the series.
It kind of seems like the first goal is going to dictate things, and it doesn't always end up being the case. Brett Pesce scores an early goal. It was too easy. That's really all I have to say about it. You know, the Bruins need to be better there. They kind of just snuck in and buried one real quick. A fast one on the Bruins in a way. Wasn't great. Patrice Bergeron, he's a guy that is stepping up when they need him to. Last night was tough. In game five, but overall, you know, when he's, you know, these games three and four, he has been a huge part of their victories, and that is huge. He buries one here. Marchand gets it to Pastrnak behind the net off the faceoff. Pastrnak just throws it off the back of the net, which in this case I'm fine with because it's better than potentially turning it over or trying to send it along the wall to a defenseman and it gets intercepted. Some sort of turnover, some sort of screw up, not, you know, trying to chirp Pastrnak or anything, but you know, it's sometimes just throwing it off the back of the net or throwing it out front to see what happens isn't the worst thing to do, and it ended up working out pretty well here. Bounced off the back of the net, Bergeron takes it and sneaks it under Ranta, kind of threw him off there, and they don't ask how, they ask how many. It wasn't the prettiest goal, but it was smart heads up hockey for Marchand to get in there on the faceoff, get Pastrnak damage control behind the net to not turn it over, and Bergeron makes good on it. Really solid, savvy hockey from the Bruins, top line reunited. I didn't hate the move, and it ended up working well, pretty good in this game. Riley and Brown on the stall goal, can't make a play behind the net. Tough. Niederreiter sends the puck up in front to Jordan Staal, who buries it. Not great. That's really, it just wasn't great. Not the best look. then we shift to the DeBrusque goal, and I don't really understand some people's angle on this.
Mm-hmm.
I think people determined their angles too soon because they didn't see all the angles of the goal, you know, what happened, what actually happened. Puck is loose, DeBrusque scored. It's that simple. People think the one jab going for the puck, which I don't think he was going to intentionally, you know, move Rantis' pad out of the way.
Yep.
Qualifies as some sort of goal interference. That's insane to me.
That's more so on the refs. Sorry to cut you off, but like, if you don't want that to happen, like, blow the whistle sooner. Puck's still up for grabs at that point. That's how I see it. Like, I know this has been the most controversial thing to come from this game. But if you're not going to blow the whistle, you're going to allow that guy to have a scrum in front of the net and dig for the puck, and stuff like that's going to happen.
I think it happened in, it might have been the Rangers and Penguins series with DeSmith or Shesterkin, where there was like a much more clear pushing of the pad of one of the goalies. I might be wrong on the goalie or the series, honestly. But I remember a situation where it was much more black and white that, you know, the player wasn't necessarily trying to push the pad verbatim, but there was less of an effort to be going for the puck. And DeBrusque wasn't intentionally going to push Rantis' pad. That would be dumb, and he just wasn't doing it. He was looking for the puck. I don't think he saw it immediately. And when he saw it, he buried it because it was loose, and the whistle wasn't blown. He played the whistle, blew, and, you know, he got rewarded for it because he buried it before the whistle blew. If Ranta had some more time, too, with and a lot of people don't notice either, Brett Pesce would have been in his way. Brett Pesce was on his knees in the crease. Like, that would have been a debacle, too, and it wouldn't have been on the Bruins. It still would have counted because it's his own defenseman in the way.
Yep. Still Carolina. Yep.
It's kind of similar in a way to, you know, I don't think people get confused about this as much, is when a defenseman makes a play and pushes a player into the goalie, they get scored on. They're like, oh, that's goal interference. No, it isn't.
Nope, your their own player did it. Yeah.
Or blocked them and caused them to some sort of collision to happen for them to fall on the goalie or make interference with the goalie. Make interference, I don't think, is good English, but I don't really care.
Get what you're getting at.
Yeah, I'm getting at what I'm getting at. It was just a weird thing. You know, Carlo Koliakovo was like all up in arms about it. Like, that's just weird. He's weird, I guess. I didn't really know that about him, but yeah, it just wasn't really worth the debacle that kind of started from it, and it was a good goal. The puck was loose, and he buried it. Sucks to suck if you don't like that. I just don't really understand if you're in that other camp or if you're still dying on this hill somehow. The dumb challenge by, you know, somewhat dumb, I guess. You know,
it makes sense to some degree, but
but yeah, it leads to a penalty for the screwed up challenge. Then Aho smokes Bergeron in the face. Like, 4 minutes, Bergeron's got a nice scar. He was with his kids after the game, which is funny. I saw somebody speculate that he has his kids up at the podium because he wants to soak it all in with his family.
That's it, yeah.
I don't know if I fully
buy into that. Don't like the sound of that.
It could be part of it, but, I mean, he's also just got his kids at the game and probably just wanted them to come up with him because it would look funny. Like, he, like, hey, dad's got a scar on his face, like, let's bring the kids up, see if they get a funny reaction. Maybe one of the NHL PR guys said, hey, have Bergeron bring his kids up, that'd be funny. I don't fucking know.
I'm not in the room, I don't make the decisions.
I'm not down there. So all this gives the Bruins an extended 5-on-3 that bleeds into the third period, and thankfully they scored, dude, because I just I really
would have lost it if they didn't.
Would have been thrilled if they didn't score. It was a huge opportunity to bury one. Rod Brindamore was definitely low-key happy in the back of his mind for a brief second because he was like, ooh, I have something to complain about now. Because he loves complaining, dude. Like, oh, my God.
He does,
For this Rod the Bod, tough guy, he was a great hockey player when he played.
Too. Whines about a lot.
He whines and whines and whines. He tries to Berube the media and the refs and the league. Like, it's so embarrassing. He's such a loser. Like, oh my God, dude, grow up. Just grow up. Like, your team is playing well overall, and you're like looking like a cartoon character behind the back, like,
what is going on? Yeah.
What is going on? What are you doing in my pizzeria? Like, he's not Italian. That was
just say, Moore does not sound any remotely Italian.
But like, can't be. He's just up in arms, and he gets like mad about stupid shit. Like, dude, just focus on the game. Like, God, just relax. Like, somebody get this guy a blunt. Like, let him just relax in the locker room. Like,
throw the guy a beer and call it a day.
Like,
but on that, though, it was, I mean,
Mowgli, like,
didn't go, because I know that wasn't the power play technically that they scored on, right? It was the power play of the double minor that Aho got, right, for high stick conversion, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Okay, but even so, it doesn't go hand in hand. But like, just to see the Bruins capitalize on something like that was nice. I mean, obviously, nothing went right last night that we'll get to. But like, again, that's why you had some high hopes, as they were finally getting some puck luck and finally were able to figure some things out, where you get an opportunity like this and they made the most of it and were able to score off it. So that's what's been so frustrating to me. But nice to see them do it in this game.
Yeah, this was an eventful one. Mm-hmm. The most unfortunate event of this game, to see Seth Jarvis just take a hammer to the nuts, like, just, it truly doesn't sit well as a man. It happens to the youngest player in the playoffs too. Like,
shit happens.
One of the youngest guys in the whole league this season, just takes one right to the jewels.
Mm-hmm.
Painful to watch. You know, he ended up powering through it, which, you know, I don't know if I could have done that.
Like, nope.
I don't know. I might have been done for the game if I were Seth Jarvis. It's just, it's not a fun feeling.
Well, shit, we saw that
shot at that speed, personally. No. You know, getting hit in the nuts, not fun.
Oh, I was going to say, we saw that happen with Rob Williams in the Celtics series, and he went down like he tore his groin or something. All it was a little, I mean, obviously, a little kick there is probably the same as a big kick in that area, but still, like, the way he reacted, I don't want to have that happen, whether it's getting kicked in the gonads by, you know, Giannis, or just having a hockey puck, which I would have to assume is worse, like, that coming at that speed compared to a little, like, back kick or donkey kick. But,
taking,
it can't be fun.
Taking a hard shot in any area, like, seriously, seriously hurts, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to, like, go
unless back your pain tolerance is ridiculous.
This soapbox about my past playing hockey growing up, but I'll tell one quick story. Okay. I took a shot from a kid who had the hardest slap shot on the ice in the inside of my boot. And as a 14, I was probably 14 at the time. It took so much of me to not, like, cry on the bench.
Crumple.
It
hurt. Yeah.
It hurt so bad that it took everything in me to not, like, I don't know how fast it was, but this kid could smoke it. He was 6'3", big kid, really big kid, just a moose on the ice. I take the slap shot right on the inside of the boot. It hurts so goddamn bad, dude. Like, taking a shot in the wrong area is truly the worst. And I don't know. I might have been out for multiple games if I was Seth Jarvis. Like, I don't know if he's still – if he's 100% down there right now. I can't say.
That's why you wear cups. That's what they're made for.
Sometimes, yeah. You know, the seismic boom can still hurt, though. Because, man, like, he took a tough one there. Yeah, he really did. I don't envy him, but, like, hockey tough, bro. Hockey tough. You got Bergeron coming back on the high stick and playing. You got Seth Jarvis, you know, powering through as best he can. A puck to the nuts area, the groin area. You don't like it. You don't like it down there. It doesn't feel good. Moving on, though, the set play off the draw, the Pastrnak was electric. Like, it was – we've seen set plays from – the Bruins, especially the top line of the past, and, you know, they take advantage of the top line being reunited, and they do what they're capable of, because, you know, this isn't a thing they've done all the time in the past when they're together, but it is something they are absolutely capable of. The celebration was awesome. The finish was awesome. It happened so quick. It threw off the Canes, rightfully so. Like, that's the type of situation you know, I don't care who you are as a defenseman, it's hard for anyone to defend that. Like, it happened so quick. It was so precise. It's the best three-man unit in hockey, I'll still say, even though they didn't spend a lot of this season together. They spent it apart. Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak, Landeskog, MacKinnon, Rantanen, some of the best three-man units in the league. You could say Goudreau, Lindholm, Tkachuk as well, even though the Flames have been struggling to score a little bit outside of the most recent game. They won 4-1, but another side of the bracket that's not looking too good for me. The Flames kind of struggling.
Yeah.
I've been high on the Flames. Rightfully so, but, you know, they're stumbling a little bit against the Stars to start. Yeah, man, deceptively tough pass. It might not, you know, come off as the most difficult pass that Marchand had to make, but I can assure you, that is tough. You gotta just look at it closely. It was a seed, and it was perfect. You know, Marsh Pastrnak kind of does, like, I don't know if he intended this, but he's like the "Are you not entertained?" just like the hockey version versus like the, you know, Spartan arena version or whatever how you want to call it from that movie that I'm somehow drawing a blank on the name of.
Living on the Highway.
That wasn't 300, was it? No, I don't think.
No.
I should know this.
Might have been.
I haven't seen the movie in God knows how long.
Either 300 or Gladiator.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
If one of the two.
Maybe it was, but like.
Haven't seen either in a while.
Who cares? If anybody knows, they'll you know, they'll make the connection. Mm-hmm. Are you not entertained? It was just awesome. It was like a game that was already pretty good. To see that happen was just crazy. I can't even imagine what it must have been like in the Garden. I can imagine a little bit being in game three.
Being there, yeah.
Nuts. Mm-hmm. To be able to win was incredible. Then Marchand gets the empty netter while D'Angelo throws his stick like a street hockey player.
Child, yeah.
Like, douchebag.
Mm-hmm.
And, if, you know, he doesn't get fined or get an unsportsmanlike penalty. I'm not saying he should have got fined, but, like, it would have
been really funny. His defense of it was the dumbest thing I've ever heard, too.
It's really funny. It would have been really funny to see him get an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty in the final minute of the game, too, because he probably would have started crying.
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, this
guy's a bitch about something.
He's a hothead. He's one of the worst people in sports. Like, it's just, if you were surprised by this, like, I don't know, you're just not watching the game. You don't know much about watching the game close enough over the years, and you don't know who Tony D'Angelo is because he's a bad guy, bad vibes. Yeah, and I mean, he's just a racist, a bad guy.
In case you forgot about that, opinion, yeah. In case
you forgot, dates back to like 2014 and maybe sooner. Multiple incidences in junior hockey, verbally and physically going after officials. Getting suspended on multiple occasions, deleting his Twitter account because he can't handle people criticizing his dumb tweets, getting cut by the Rangers because of how dumb he and crazy he is. And then, you know, it's just sad to see an organization like the Canes, who had a good history of promoting things like inclusivity, you know, the LGBTQ community support for them, and then they sign a player with a very troubling past. And yeah, it just kind of goes against everything you stand for. And people out there support Tony D'Angelo and kind of like,
act yeah, like that's
what he's done in the past isn't a big deal, which, you know, you can support the guy if he's on your team. That doesn't really bother me. It does a little bit, but like, whatever. He's on your team. But if you're going to condone the shit he's done, you're just an idiot. And you know that deep down, and you won't admit it because it doesn't support what you're trying to do to satisfy your ego online or in person. And that sucks. Like, I don't know, if you're that confused in your brain and that incapable of having a normal one, go to therapy.
Good luck.
Go to therapy. Just get your life fixed because you're a fucking idiot.
The thing that sucks too, either, and like, just to go off of how big of an asshole he truly is, like, it sucks that he's made such a difference. And like, he's like, again, hate the person, but like, he's been really good in this series, which makes it even like more easy to hate the guy. When, like, it's killing me that it seems like every time there's a goal scored or, you know, some big play, he's right in the middle of it, which just makes you hate him more. Which, like, it's, like I said, an aggravating thing, too, that has kind of come up these last couple games.
Yeah, I mean, he is a good player. Like, I'd be, you know, I'd be arrogant to the fact that, you know,
to not admit that, yeah.
Like, that's what, you know, was the theme when in his draft year, too. Like, he's a very good player. He's got a high upside, but do you want to deal with the headache? And organizations haven't in the past. The Coyotes didn't want to. The Rangers didn't want to. Like, I'm sure he caused a lot of shit in Sarnia in junior hockey.
Oh, probably.
He played for the Sarnia Sting. Like, no doubt. And yeah, I mean, it just proves that, you know, if you're good, no matter what your past is like, someone will try and employ you.
Yep.
And that's what the Canes did. And it's working for them, but, you know, it just kind of goes against a lot of what they've stood for in the past, and it's pretty embarrassing. But, you know, the seeing Canes fans just, you know, defend his actions too, like in the past, it's embarrassing.
It's ridiculous, embarrassing. Yeah. Yep.
you got issues if you're doing that. You got issues, and it's just mm-hmm. not for debate. You know it deep down. Maybe you don't if you're that stupid, but you're just an idiot. Like, that's just really how it is. Yeah, I had a lot of them in my mentions today, acting like they're like bogging my day down.
You had a field day today from what I was.
Yeah, acting like they're bogging my day down when I saw the mentions in my mentions on my lunch break. Like, oh yeah, wow, I'm spending my lunch break tweeting at people, ruining my day. Like, yeah, you guys know so much. Like, please, please get other hobbies. Like,
well, they were all serious accounts too, from what I was looking at. I mean, you had the one that was.
There's no way these people have jobs. They're just.
Yeah, you had the one that was Kanye West in a Canes uniform. Then there was another one. I think it was James Harden. I saw was like really shitty edited into a Hurricanes uniform. So like, definitely, like you said, real people with real lives that have a ton going on for themselves.
The breakfast of champions, instead of breakfast, though, they're eating like batteries because it's stupid. Like. Mm-hmm. And probably pouring the acid in their throats, because that just probably deteriorates.
This is how they go.
That are clearly, not fully functioning. Like, yeah, I don't know. If you're making a burner account with like a James Harden art project and like Kanye, you really gotta go to therapy. Yep. You really gotta go to therapy. You gotta
just think somebody has to wake up one day and go, I'm gonna go to Twitter. You know what I want my profile picture to be? I want it to be I'm a Canes fan. A Hurricanes fan, but I want James Harden to be in that uniform for whatever reason.
Just so strange. Like, oh yeah, you're spending your day arguing with burners. Like, dude, it's my lunch break. Like, I don't care.
I don't really give a crap. Yeah, it's not affecting me in the slightest. Like, and now I'm going to shit on you later on tonight.
You're in my mentions. I can respond. Like, sorry. Sorry if you don't get that. Well, you also respond. Like, it's just, it's really, really mind-boggling to see people carry themselves like that.
Well, I can see that STEM major that had 49 followers on Twitter really got to you.
He hit 50.
Good for him. That's great.
Maybe you'll hit 51, and then
50. Well, at least we got a feel good story tonight.
You should keep a notebook and track when you get new followers, dude. Yep. Like, you should put it on the fridge. You should send it to the guy, and maybe he'll make an art project for you, like he did.
Username 12345 with the blank profile picture. Follow me. Definitely a real account.
Yeah, John 8924876 with a default profile picture. And
people, one follower following zero.
Just go to therapy. Just go to therapy.
Get a hobby.
Get some help. Fly a kite. Letter Kenny reference.
Yep.
Also of note in this game, I'm going to talk more about the refs and how they've, taken over parts of the series on both sides. It's not just in favor of the Canes, even though most recently it has been. We talked about, the Canes having 9 power plays in game 2 in that debacle that we reacted to live last week. The Bruins had 9 power plays in game 4. Like, it happens to both sides.
Going both ways,
was more egregious in terms of what happened to cause these penalties in game 2. There was a lot more chippiness. Mm-hmm. Yep. But, it goes to the same thing. You can pick apart whatever call you want. I'm not going to stop you. Whether I agree or not is a different story. But the Bruins got 9 power plays too. And, as much as that's good for the Bruins when they do score, when they do convert, when it can change momentum, I don't like seeing playoff games, no matter whether it involves the Bruins or not. The Bruins could be out of the playoffs, and this happens one year, and it would annoy me. I don't like games being dominated by the refs unless they have to be.
Shouldn't, yeah, exactly.
And these games just that have been at times, or the majority of the game, haven't had to be. And it's
not. That's what I mean. I think.
In the Bruins series, but I feel like this year most noticeable in the Bruins series.
Yeah, absolutely. I was gonna say, I feel like this year more than any, we've had way more. And I've seen on Twitter, this has kind of been the gist of a lot of people's thoughts too. Is there's been way more penalties called just in this series alone than I feel like we've seen in any other in years prior. For whatever reason, maybe it is that chippiness that you mentioned, or just like you said, the referees maybe want to or think that people are shelling out hundreds of dollars to come see them every night, but. Who knows? It's getting egregiously bad. And it's like I said, it's happened in basketball, these series so far. It's happening in hockey. We already know about baseball and that, shit show that they're officiating is. But it's been bad everywhere. It's just more apparent, it seems like, in these games when they matter more so than some others.
Yeah, the thing that annoys me, too, that I think is kind of flying under the radar, anybody who doesn't and is looking for something to listen to for hockey or for the Bruins, and just other fun, enjoyable things to listen to, should listen to the Sports Up Underground with Ty Anderson and Matt Dolliff, because they bring up a lot of interesting points whenever they have a show about the Bruins. You know, they do other stuff besides hockey talk as well. Listen for yourself. Ty mentioned, I don't remember if this was after game one or game two off the top of my head, because it's a little while ago now, that something happened when the refs or like the teams or a combination were told, you know, tone it down a little bit, like tone it down a little bit, you know, essentially saying you're not going to get away with stuff. And that's really been the theme of the series. That, you know, seems to be what the vibe that was given off to whoever, you know, the message was sent to, relayed to. And ever since, the refs have just been like taking over games when they don't need to at times. And it's tarnishing to me. And like I said, it's not just in favor of the Canes. It's not. It's tarnishing what could be a way more universally enjoyed series, because I think this is ruining the series to some extent for a lot of people. And it's not just Bruins and Canes fans. I've seen people on Twitter that are fans of neither team and hate this shit. For anybody in the hockey community, you probably saw Danny All-Star, you know, one of the more popular hockey Twitter accounts, not a Bruins fan, just like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, what are the refs doing? The fans don't come to watch you just like
put the whistle. That's what I mean.
Call it evenly too. Like some situations, they just can't call it evenly. They can't decide what to do after a scrum. They screw it up, which you know, has been a theme, let me tell you.
Well, that's the thing. It seems like in those, they take the wrong guy half the time.
It's brutal. Like, it's so easy too, but it's just, it's not. I get the game moves fast. But there needs to be a better job done for situations like these that we're going to talk about. And I come into the playoffs hoping it's going to be different, not expecting it. And it just never changes. It never changes. It evolves in different ways. You know, there are some games here and there where, you know, the refs do a good job more often, more so than they do a bad job. But the bad jobs stand out more. That's undoubtedly true.
Yep. And can't argue with that. Absolutely. My
God, was this game last night a doozy in the worst way. It was just obnoxious. It was so obnoxious. It ruins what should have, you know, for the Canes obviously be a good game, but could have been a less annoying game. Like, they could have done things a lot better. It was a fucking joke.
I'm not gonna lie,
was a fucking joke.
I was so aggravated just with – just not – penalties aside, just the Bruins' performance as a whole, and just to get my thoughts out of the way, to have the two games they had in Boston, which, I mean, like, I think the both of us could assume or could think after they went down 2-0, we weren't feeling too high about this team and might have thought, you know, the series is probably over. They might get one in Boston, and then that's it. A gentleman sweep in 5, maybe 6 if they're lucky. But after the two games they have in Boston, you're sitting there going, okay, all the momentum going back to Carolina is on Carolina. Like, if they go down 3-2 after going up 0-2, like, that's a huge problem for them. And for the Bruins, obviously, everything going in their favor of that. Plus, we didn't even mention that, you know, McAvoy comes back literally like an hour before the game, it seemed like, was come back out of nowhere. So you would have thought all the momentum was going to be on the Bruins side, and to play as flat as they did and just really – outside of the first 5 minutes, I should say, because, I mean, they played well. They had chances in the first 5 minutes. But outside of that, to have the performance they did, I was so aggravated. Like, this was the first time I've shut a playoff game off. I didn't watch any. So I heard the third period got incredibly out of hand. Whether that was just, you know, Carolina dominating or if there were any more egregious penalties than that, I don't know, because I did not watch a second of the third period. I was that aggravated and just done with the Bruins' performance last night.
Yeah, after the fourth goal, I went up. I played some Rocket League. That didn't go well because Rocket League is just a strange game sometimes, but I was kind of watching, like, half watching the rest of the game. You know, there wasn't a whole lot else. It was over.
It's the first time I chose going back to work, because I was at work trying to watch the game in the break room. First time I chose actually trying to work instead of, you know, sitting in my ass in the break room watching the Bruins game. But that's how bad it was.
Swayman made 33 saves and 37 shots. He played all right overall, but not great.
Yeah, I didn't think he was terrible. First goal was kind of iffy, but
it was, you know, I think Swayman has seen pretty reasonable shot totals this year. I think this is one of the higher ones he's seen all year, which is good and bad for him, because obviously it wasn't a great game for him. He wasn't the main reason they lost, though, by any means, maybe by a little bit of means, but
I wouldn't put the entire blame on him. Nope. No, I wouldn't even put half the blame on him.
No, me neither. But you know, these higher workload games, whether they win or lose, are going to be good for him in the long run, which is a silver lining. It could have went worse. It could have went better. To me, this game, it was just so unbelievably obvious early on that the refs wanted the home team to win. Mm-hmm. It's no coincidence that the home team gets the benefit of the doubt in these controversial games in terms of calls. Not as much in game four, but there were a lot of calls in that game, as we touched on earlier. Mm-hmm. Like we also said, the first goal has led to games being a toss-up. It's not all in the refs. You know, Ryan kind of touched on that a little bit. It's not all in the refs. The Bruins struggled to keep the puck in the offensive zone. Mm-hmm. Breakouts for Carolina were too easy, which is what we saw as a problem in games one and two, and not so much in three or four. Ironically, it's a tale of two teams. The Bruins are better at home than they are on the road this year. Yep. In the playoffs. It's very, very obvious.
Very apparent, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, one thing that's kind of been a glaring thing that's sticking out outside of one player in particular is how Erik Haula has just not been good.
Disappeared for the most part. I mean, he had an okay start to the series, but after, we'll say what, game two-ish? I mean, I didn't even think he played well in game two. Like, he's kind of been a no-show. There's been other guys, too. Like you said, maybe there's a couple guys I have worse than him, but that's what I mean. You need something out of somebody other than Burton. And again, this is the same dead horse we've keep beating for 5+ years, at least that you and I have known each other. Like, it's the same three guys every time you get into the playoffs. Bergeron, Pasternak, and Marchand. We've said it a billion times. We'll say it probably a million times more as long as we do this. Like, and as long as they're in the league. You need more from anybody other than your top three guys. And the fact that you really haven't gotten that outside of, you know, game three-ish, game four-ish, like, it's been ridiculous. And it's especially, like, with the talent Haula has around him. I know, you know, we talked about this throughout the year. You know, Haula isn't, he's not a second line center. He stepped into that role a little bit towards the end of the season and started playing well, but he's kind of reverted back to that first half of the season guy that really isn't doing anything out. He's just kind of there, which is one of the more aggravating things.
And even at times he was playing the best, he was just kind of there. Mm-hmm. He needed to be a complimentary piece and he wasn't. And at times he was cashing in on points, and that's not to take anything away from him. It's just how it is. Like, mm-hmm. It really is. He wasn't this amazing guy in terms of pushing the pace. He wasn't, you know, scoring 3-4 points a game or once in a while. He was a good complimentary piece. He kept up with them because of his speed, and that was it. And it worked. And it's just not always going to work. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying the Bruins should have gone to second line center, but I think in the back of their minds, they do have known the risk that this could have happened. I'm not blaming Don Sweeney here or anything, because they did try. Speaking of the Sports Hub Undergrounder, you know, too, Ty Anderson made a good reminder about this too. They tried for Claude Giroux. Giroux didn't want to go.
I do remember that, yep.
They were in the mix for Andrew Kopp. The Rangers wanted to pay the price more. Kopp's been a good player for the Rangers, which kind of stinks too. But, you know, the Rangers aren't a worse spot than the Bruins.
Yep.
So
that's true. I'd rather be down 3-2 than 3-1 or whatever the hell that series is at now.
They're down 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate. And it comes back to the player here too. I don't want to make this the Erik Haula hate hour or anything, but like, he needs to be better. He has 2 points. He's a -5. Like I said a little bit last week too, like, plus minus is subjective, but when you have as many guys as the Bruins have with bad plus minus ratings in a series where they're, you know, struggling to gain footing, it sticks out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to be fixed. Craig Smith.
He has been useless.
Has these random shifts where he plays like a maniac. We saw it at the start of game three. We've seen it at times. He gets in there, throws the body. He plays physical, but the guy, dude, I'm convinced I have better hands than Craig Smith.
I've never played hockey in my life, and I might.
He has no
hands. Or street hockey, rather.
He has no hands. He can handle the puck. He can carry the puck. But he fumbles it a lot. He's not like this quick-release shooter all the time. When he gets space, he can, you know, bury it. But he's been neutralized because his hands aren't quick enough. You know, he just hasn't been as sharp as he needs to be. And it hurts. It hurts because you're trying to find a spot for him that's working now, because you have to adjust to get him going, and nothing is working.
You can't put him anywhere. Like,
You can't.
You don't reward him by putting him on the first line. Like, that, yeah. It's a bad look, and he doesn't deserve to play up there. But, like, that would be the only thing I would think is – but, I mean, we've seen that before. They've given him that opportunity. He kind of, again, is just a no-show. So,
and we've also seen opportunities in turn where he's been awesome on the first line. But
true, yep.
It's hard to say, you know, you can ignite him on the first line. But mm-hmm. You can also weigh them down with the way he's been playing.
Oh, absolutely. So really, and this,
I don't know if
it is. At this point, I was just going to say that with – what you have to do when, you know, the chip stacked against you now, like, this isn't something you're not really in try it mode right now. Like,
yeah, you're in win mode. Like, mm-hmm. You're trying to win.
You have to,
like,
or it is over. Mm-hmm.
Or it is over at this point. Back to the game though. I mean, they didn't test Ronta enough, but he had great stops on Marshawn and that, backhand chance. He kind of slowed it down and tried to pull mm-hmm. the backhand on him. Pastrnak had a golden opportunity, couldn't quite put the shot where he wanted to. That stung. He played fine. He did enough to get them to win, and, you know, the offense picked him up. This is, you know, I probably should have talked about this earlier, but I really had an issue with how Domi wasn't called for embellishment on the
that was the hook. Yep.
That was it wasn't the most egregious embellishment ever.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could have gotten away with giving him embellishment there, but they didn't because it wasn't egregious enough and he's on the home team and they mm-hmm. want the home team to at least get a chance. I think that was clear. Call me the tinfoil hat guy. But, like, I think that was clear that they wanted the Canes to get the early advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's on the road, maybe they make that call on Domi for embellishment because there was reasonable embellishment there.
Mm-hmm. Was it forward?
A bit later. Right. This is what we're segueing into.
Okay. This was the one I had the biggest problem with.
Forbert gives him a little jab. Fine. You can call Forbert there. No problem. There were three similar instances in the playoffs so far where similar things like that have happened, and the Bruins are the only ones that go to the box.
This is where Domi, it gets kind of iffy.
Domi, I noticed watching the replay again today, there was the one jab to the, you know, the face area of Forbert, and if you look at it closely, he gives him a jab to the midsection too, which isn't mm-hmm. like an outright penalty, but it's just something to add to it here. He does both of those things more than what Forbert did technically. It doesn't get called, and it benefits the Canes. It gets the refs what they want. It gets the home team what they want, the team what they want. And then the refs kind of put the whistle away for a little bit. Oh, real surprising. I wonder why.
Yeah,
it's not a coincidence to me. It's not. Call me the conspiracy theorist guy. I don't fucking care. It was so clear that they wanted the Canes to have a chance to take advantage in this game, mm-hmm. and they got it.
How many penalties did the Bruins end up with last night? I didn't end up looking at the box score to see how many times they put Carolina on the power play. Do you know off the top of your head, or just you have it
back? But
because the one thing I was,
I think Carolina had maybe five, but that's
okay. Because I was gonna say, I mean, you just talked about it. The Bruins had 9 power plays in game 4. Like, that's the one thing I hope isn't on the referees and the, you know, officials' mindset is, well, we gave Boston 9 power plays at home. Now that it's in Carolina again, we have to, like, that's something exactly. That's something you, if you do it, if you have to do it, games, you know, maybe game 1 and like 3. So that way, each early on in the series, each home team gets, you know, the benefit of the doubt when it comes to calls. But, like, regardless, it's a stupid thing to do. But again, like, that's kind of what I'm, if I want to put my tinfoil hat on right now, that's kind of what I'm thinking is, you know, let's even it out now that this game's back in Carolina. We'll give them the majority of the calls, like, which is a shitty look. That's not how, again, it's the playoffs. You shouldn't be looking to call penalties. Nobody wants to see that. Absolutely. Nobody wants to see the game slowed down too by the amount of, like, again, it's, this is going to be like old man talking here, but like, nobody wants to see the amount of TV timeouts and the stoppages that come with looking at you know, having a penalty called, you know, is this a double minor? Well, let's go look at this and take more time. Like, that's, it slows everything down. Nobody wants to see that.
Yeah. And it's just, it's like, I tweeted it a couple of times, and I hope Bruins fans didn't take offense to this because it wasn't my intention. But
mm-hmm.
I said a couple of times where, like, my thoughts, like, kind of tying in with what I'm talking about here. Like, if you don't see what's going on here, you're dumb. Like, mm-hmm. you're dumb. You are looking at the game at a biased perspective, or you're just not realizing what's going on. Because it's obvious. It's obvious. It was so obvious. And, you know, the Bruins didn't score at 5-on-5. They didn't score, you know, until Connor Clifton buries one. And Eric Holly gets a garbage time point to make his resume look less shitty.
Mm-hmm.
The Bruins only got outshot by 4. They were better on the dot. They were 0-3 in the power play, which hurts. Carolina was 2-5. They outhit the Hurricanes. They had almost as many shot blocks. And the Hurricanes had 6 more giveaways. And you lose that badly. Like, it just can't happen. It's
a game where they didn't show, like, I mean, I guess stat-wise they showed up, but, like, from a, like, we need to win this game to keep momentum standpoint. Like I said, like, they just looked from the get-go, outside of the first 5 minutes, like, they were just kind of there. Bunch of guys skating around, like.
Yeah, it's just the energy level's different on the road. It's different. Mm-hmm. They just, something doesn't click. They try, but it doesn't work. The Canes are better at breaking the puck out. They're better at establishing zone time, and it's different at home, and hopefully that can continue in game 6.
Well, that's why I have a game 6 take that I feel like a lot of Bruins fans aren't going to like.
Yeah, we will get to that in a second. A few more things. You know, the first goal of the game, Swayman's got to stop the Slavin goal. He has to stop it. He just has to. D'Angelo makes a play to get it over to Slavin. Slavin has all the time in the world to walk in. Swayman just has to have that. Like, I was a little bit worried after that goal, but I expected better going forward, so I wasn't, like, panicking. I had this listed earlier than it happened in the game, but there was one point in the third period where Taylor Hall takes a high-sticking penalty to ruin the Bruins' power play. And Mike Riley's done this a couple times in similar situations in the past. I don't mean to as a segment to dump on Mike Riley, but
it's they've done this in the series, too. Sorry to cut you off, but that's
– it's like
– 3 or 4 times it's happened in this series.
Just use the body. Like, you don't have to go for the stick lifts every time. It's lazy. It's lazy. It's so lazy. The Capitals are winning 2-0 over the Panthers. It's lazy. It's lazy. And speaking of things that are lazy on another side of things, Slavin very clearly interferes with Curtis Lazar, sending him onto the dasher. Very easy to see, especially at center ice.
Yep. No call.
It doesn't get called. Like, this is fine to them. This is what they wanted. You know, like, oh, the Bruins are losing at this point in the game. It changes a little bit the mindset. So we don't need to call it. It's not going to change the game. It could have a little bit, but they're like, we don't need to call it. Whatever. That is such an easy call to make, and there's no excuse for it not being made. It's just, that's just how it is. The first Jarvis goal. My God, dude, Brandon Carlo, you're not making things any better for yourself. Like, he's lucky he got his money, dude, because, oh my God, if his contract was up this year, he'd be looking at, like, have a tough time giving him $2.5 million. Like, that might seem extreme, but, like, dude,
He's had a seriously bad year.
He's not been the same player since he got hurt against the Islanders last year. He just hasn't been. Which is really unfortunate. I'm not using this as a way to just completely pile on Carlo. There's something going on mentally with him. He's dealt with a lot of injuries.
Yep.
He is not there mentally. Something is up. He's not the same defenseman. We've seen him at points in the best points of his career where he's been more assertive physically. He's made quicker decisions. And he's not that guy anymore. I don't think it's a coincidence.
Yeah, I think the wear and tear is finally starting to catch up to him a little bit. Dude, which sucks, because you're in trouble if that's the case.
I agree. This Jarvis goal, dude, is a situation where Brandon Carlo somehow needs to tap into his head and be like, I'm huge. Seth Jarvis is not.
I should be burying you.
Throw him out of the arena for all I care. Like, get in there and bury him. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. I do, but I don't. Just bury him. Like,
makes sense, but it doesn't.
Bury him. You have time. If you get there a little quicker, you don't saunter over there and skippity doodah. Get in there and throw him out of the fucking crease, dude. Like, what are we doing? You're 6'5".
Doesn't want to do it.
He doesn't want to do it.
Again, feeds into the, like, again, they were just kind of there last night. You didn't really see any of the execution you saw from games 3 and 4, which, again, was the most maddening thing for me. And that's, again, why I turned the game off. I'm like, this is, it's like you said, it's been a tale of two teams. on the road and at home, which again is incredibly frustrating. Like, you should be able to carry over something from, you know, your game three or four performance, but the fact that nothing comes with you, like, it's aggravating.
Yeah, it really blows my mind. But it's one of those things too. It does and it doesn't.
It's something I feel like you've come to, and again, it's really crapping on this team, but like, I feel like at this point, it's something you've come to expect. Like, how many times have you seen this team over the years do the exactly this?
Or something.
Like, you expect them to do one thing, and they just completely, they're a shell of themselves and a shell of the team that you've rooted for most of the year.
Yeah, and I'll put this out there. I'm not going to go on a rant about it. There are some people out there that want Bruce Cassidy gone. This isn't our way of
this playing. I can't understand
it. Bruce Cassidy should be gone. You don't fire Bruce Cassidy and get better. You don't.
No, you get worse.
You don't get better by firing Bruce Cassidy. It just doesn't happen.
If you fire him, you might as well blow the rest of the team up, because Bergeron will probably retire, and then, like, it's going to be obviously tough to blow it.
What message are you sending? There's rumors about, like, people don't connect with Cassidy. You don't know shit about
how they connect with Cassidy,
because there's nothing out in the public. You don't know shit, so stop acting like it. We don't either. But I can say safely that this team will be worse without Bruce Cassidy if they fire him.
100% would agree with you.
They shouldn't.
Because then you'd ask those people who you want here, and they'd go, oh, I don't know. That's not my job to figure out who the next coach of the Bruins would be. It's like, all right, if you're going to fire the known guy, you might want to give me somebody that you think can replace him and be better than what he is right now.
Yeah, you're right.
How it goes. How it should go.
Nice to see, you know, going back to the game a little bit, nice to see Clifton get rewarded. He's been one of the few consistent defensemen. You know, Charlie McAvoy has been good when he's out there. Lindholm has struggled a bit at times, but then he got hurt. It's been a tough go for Lindholm. Like, he's played good at, you know, for the majority of his time on the ice, but, you know, it hasn't been perfect for him, and obviously dealing with injuries just makes it hard to get comfortable. Clifton has been good. Forbert has been pretty good overall. They have been a sneaky good pairing when it comes to the metrics and being what you expect out of a third pairing for the majority of the season. It's not new, but they don't stick out as much because they're not a flashy defensive pairing. But they're solid. They're solid. And that's something good to take out of the defense, because, you know, you have McAvoy, but you've had a very questionable second pairing for a lot of the year. It needs to be fixed in the future. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But one saving grace is Connor Clifton, a guy that's a wild card, has overall been pretty solid. Like, he's reeled it in. He hasn't been the complete maniac we've seen him turn into at times, which can be good and bad. You know, you never know with Clifton sometimes. Just in his nature, it's how he plays as a hockey player. But overall, they've been good, man. And, like, obviously we have Forbert's highlight of that insane game three performance where he gave me shades of, like, Dennis Seidenberg. That might be a blasphemous to some people, but he was a moose out there. I mean, there's so much going on. I talked about it earlier. Like, there's so much going on, and I wish that wasn't the case. I think this could be a more simple, you know, not dumbed down, but just a more normal series. Like, we don't have to talk about these things and don't have to be the guys that talk about the refs. Like, but that's just the thing. It's a thing. It's very prevalent in the league. It's not just the Bruins. It's not just the Canes. It's not just hockey. Like,
it's happening everywhere. Yep.
It's everywhere, baby.
It's bad everywhere.
It's the worst. Nope. It's the fucking worst. Look, I expected people to complain about this. I didn't see a lot of people doing it. To anyone complaining about Marshawn playing with his helmet off, like, just think of the situation before you hastily tweet, because Marshawn had a case for playing with his helmet off there. You're not supposed to, but I saw one person talking about how, like, the difference between how the NHL treats the Hurricanes and the Bruins. Like, Trocheck lost his penalty and what going up penalty and don't ever get marked on a warning. Like,
you're going to
play for several seconds. Like, oh my God, dude. Like, please don't cry. Like, just don't cry. Like, are you going to be okay?
Lose your mind over nothing.
Like, you won the game, too. Yeah. Like, I hope you're still not hung up on this. And Dave Jackson, at ESPN Ref NHL, tweeted this at Sarah Sivian, who tweeted about it normally, and people, of course, didn't know how to read
their minds on her.
Came at her, like she was saying the wrong thing, but she wasn't. But mm-hmm. it doesn't surprise me that people were acting stupid on Twitter because it happens every second of every day.
I say it happens every 5 seconds.
Someone's doing it.
Yep.
And Dave tweeted a shot of the rule book, and he highlighted a section of it that says, a player on the ice whose helmet comes off during the play should be assessed a minor penalty if he does not exit the playing surface or retrieve and replace his helmet properly on his head, parentheses, with or without the chin strap, his chin strap fastened within a reasonable period of time. It is reasonable if a player who is making a play on the puck or who is in the vicinity of the puck and engaged in the play at the time his helmet comes off, takes the opportunity to complete the play before either exiting the ice or retrieving and replacing his helmet. There you go. I know, you know,
the people
that are dumb don't have the memory capacity to like figure this out, but just try and remember this one because it's not hard to remember.
It's one of the few rules that's like clear cut. It's kind of, yep. Shouldn't take too much brain power to figure that one out.
Situations with gray areas in the future, but like it's, you know, mm-hmm. when it all comes down to it, it doesn't take rocket appliances to figure this out. Shout out to Rick
Disney not
for that one. Yep. Yeah, that's just something I wanted to touch on, you know, real quick. But you have some thoughts you want to segue us into, you know, game six in the future and somewhat in the past, a little bit of a mix.
Yeah, these are kind of on the fly type of things because. Yeah, some things we've touched on. I mean, you mentioned the perfection, the quote unquote perfection line, depending on what you call it. Nickname. Worst nickname on the planet. Yep.
The announcers were definitely so pumped when they saw him get reunited.
Like, yeah, like perfection line, bring it out. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, no one in the Boston area likes it or even calls it. I just had it in here just because that's what it's stupidly referred to. But no, I mean, before obviously last night, I had that. You know, they were put back together, looked pretty good. You know, since again before. Last night, since game two, 6 goals, 10 assists, 16 points, and plus 10 combined between the three guys. So now after what happened last night, you know, we've talked about it, you haven't gotten a lot from Hall. Taylor Hall's kind of been here and there in the series. He's been okay. Yep. Craig Smith has given you nothing. The question I was going to ask, and there's a lot of these that, you know, kind of have some questions behind them. Would you break the lineup? Would you keep them together? If you're Bruce Cassidy, what are you doing, if anything, with these three guys? We're mainly one guy, because Pastrnak's the one that gets bumped off and is double shifted throughout the series.
I think you in game six, at least in, you know, the short term, you know, not quite thinking of game seven super specifically,
mm-hmm.
mix it up throughout the game, but keep them together primarily.
Okay.
Make it based on matchups, make it based on offensive, defensive zone deployment.
Mm-hmm.
Have a plan. Don't just be like, I'm not saying Bruce Cassidy does this because I don't mm-hmm. know. Don't just do it willy-nilly. Don't just be like, oh, let's mix it up and see if it works.
Yep.
Have a plan. Mm-hmm. Adapt with reason, with true strategy to it. Panthers just scored, by the way.
Hey. And Giannis got an offensive foul call. Wow.
On purpose. Wow, the first one ever.
And maybe.
I tweeted this out. Giannis could hit someone with a brick as he's making, you know, a run to the basket and mm-hmm. not get called.
He could blow up half the stadium a la Bane in Batman and be perfectly fine.
Right.
It's ridiculous. It's
totally not exaggeration. But, don't worry about
mm-hmm.
people. Nope. Look, I think they can do this in a smart way. I think mm-hmm. you'd be stupid to completely break up the perfection line, as people call it stupidly at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because it works. It works. It's not only
going to work,
but it works. It's reliable. It's the best three-man forward unit in the league when they're on the mm-hmm. top of their game, which happens a lot. You have to push past the matchups that, you know, sometimes Jordan Staal's been able to limit that line, his line.
Yep.
They've been limited at times. You have to try your best to keep the Hurricanes on edge
mm-hmm.
and find matchups, find good places to deploy them, and convert. Convert better than you did in game five, please. Mm-hmm. If they couldn't score for the fucking life of them.
No, they could not. Well, that was the thing I was going to say.
Was the only goal scorer. Like,
it's the story of the game right there. But that was what I was going to say is kind of, you mentioned, you know, scheming and stuff like that and picking and choosing your spots. Like, that's obviously the big one. Whenever the Staal line is not out there, like, that's when you have to attack with these three guys. And then the thing, too, I don't know if it goes hand in hand, but at least to me it seemed like, once you saw these three guys back together, the power play seemed to click a little bit more than it had. I don't know if that has anything to do with, I mean, they obviously play together on the power play, so maybe not, but I don't know. You shaking your head seems like it might be a more plausible, you know, thought than not.
Yeah. But it's, you know, in game five, you did not shoot enough on Ranta. They're going to drive shot generation for the most part. Shoot on him a lot. You know, for the team in general, be tighter on the walls. You know, keep the puck in the zone better. You just have to be better. I'm looking at you, Matt Grizzlick.
We'll get to him in a second. Yeah,
I'm looking at you, dude. I didn't think.
Or we could do it now. Let's do it now because we're on him.
Just you got to tighten it up. Play like you do at home. If you get, especially if you get to game seven on the road, because if you play like you have in the past and you let Carolina do the same things they've been able to do, you're done in seven. It's over. And I'm not putting it past Carolina to be able to do it at home or on the road for them. Like they can do it, but I have more faith based on what we've seen in the Bruins pulling the game out at home in game six. I'm a little nervous. I'm not going to lie to you. But we, you know, it's a good segment into what's been going on with Matt Grizzly because it's not getting any better.
It's been the worst player by far. He's been horrible.
We've talked about, you know, the whole disparity between his play in the regular season in the playoffs, not just this year, in the years past. And, you know, you might think in the back of your mind, and I do at times too, it's going to get better with age. You know, he can snap out of it, but it's not.
He hasn't shown you anything to do that.
It's so
he's been bodied so all strange. Series. Like,
it's so strange. It is and it isn't, because I hate to be this guy because I hate this narrative. I think part of it is because he's smaller. He's a smaller guy. He's
absolutely that was apparent on the first goalie of the night.
And he plays a more timid style than we're used to. Matt Grizzlick, when he's at the top of his game, is an elite defenseman. He's an elite transition defenseman. He's a great puck mover. He is. There's data to support it. But, and just watch the fucking guy play when he's at the top of his game. He's ridiculous. He's such a smart defenseman.
Right now, my fear is those days have been behind us, though.
He's not. There were times early in the regular season where he was. We saw glimpses of it. We saw when he was with McAvoy. When he's been forced to move around, he's weighed down by Grizzlick a little bit. He doesn't play as well, too. It's not, or by Carlo a little bit. He's weighed down. It goes both ways. They have this of negative effect on each other, and it doesn't work. And the Bruins don't necessarily have a solution for it where it doesn't affect another area of their defensive core. So they're screwed in that regard. Because right now, something's up with Grizzlick, something's up with Carlo. I think it has to do with injuries. They're playing too timid at times. And it needs to stop, because if this keeps up, they're not winning the series. They're not. It's one defensive pairing, but when it's bad, it's really bad. And it's a glaring weakness. It's a glaring weakness. And you're right. I never thought I'd say this before. I've been a Matt Grizzlick defender for so long, and rightfully so. But he's been the worst player on the team. He's been the worst player on the team.
So I think the big
it truly kills me to say that, but he has had a really, really tough series with this series in particular.
All right, so I think the question then ponder, because the Bruins are trying to figure it out right now, is with Fluto Shinzawa's tweet earlier, I'm sure you saw it, with Lindholm potentially coming back, they're looking to take out either Grizzlick or Riley. The stat to back up potentially taking out Matt Grizzlick, as the Bruins have been outscored 6-2 at 5-on-5 with Grizzlick on the ice per natural stat trick. Again, that was from Fluto Shinzawa earlier. What are you doing if you're the Bruins? Are you taking out, are you riding with Matt Grizzlick rather to, you know, see if maybe he can give you one big push in a must-win game? Or are you sticking with Mike Riley, who, like we said, has been okay in this series? He really hasn't hurt you as we, you know, as much as we saw him do in the regular season. Because
the one guy sticking, which was just
exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's typical Mike Riley. But I mean, other than that, he's been solid. Yep. He's been better than Matt Grizzlick. And that's why I would lean towards keeping Mike Riley in the lineup. I would take Grizzlick out and put him on the bench in a heartbeat.
Look, it's to the point where when Lindholm was in the mix, you had the group, Riley was the odd man out because he wasn't playing good. It's tough to envision Grizzlick getting scratched because we're not used to it. His, you know, his family's got ties here. He, you know, played at Boston University. He's the Charlestown kid. We know what he is capable of. But it gets to a point where you need to make what you feel is the right decision because your season is on the line.
You're playing for one game right now.
If Matt Grizzlick gets cooked in game six or game seven and you lose largely because of it, or in some way because of it, you're going to be like, damn it. Like, and you're not going to be able to reverse it. I hate
that's the big thing for six.
I really do. But if I'm Bruce Cassidy, I'm doing it. Outside the box option, Jack O'Shawn, that won't happen.
I was talking to my grandfather tonight. He called right before we went on. I said that. I go, I would play O'Shawn over Grizzlick right now. If you can do that, it won't, but
it would be
easier. I'm glad we have the same mind here.
It would be easier if the third pairing wasn't gluing as well as it is, because you can move Grizzlick down to the third pairing, see what happens. You know, maybe him and Clifton could be a dicey combo. They've had moments in the past, but not the most like sturdy defensive pairing we've seen in the past. But they have been together. It's kind of rare these days, but they have played together at times. Right now, I'm going, this terrifies me because I know what can happen, but he has earned it to some extent. Mike Riley and Charlie McAvoy, Brandon Carlo and Hampus Lindholm, and Forbert and Clifton. And I'm even maybe considering seven defensemen and 11 forwards, but I don't think that'll happen.
Okay, who's the four that goes then if you were to do that? Okay. Because, I mean, the fourth line hasn't been...
He can win faceoffs, but he's playing the wing, so his faceoff ability is not coveted right now. He got benched in game five. He's not helping you. He's not. He's just not. And it sucks because I like Nosek. He was an easy guy to root for in the regular season. I thought he brought value. But I think part of the reason they signed him is because of depth. And they knew as a fourth liner that's versatile, he could score a little bit because he proved it in the past. He was good enough to get, you know, to catch the eye of Vegas and get selected in the expansion draft. Made a name for himself. The Bruins signed him, expecting more. They haven't got it. He hasn't scored since January 2nd. You need guys that are going to contribute more. And that's where I put Anton Bleed in. Because I don't think the seven defenseman thing is realistic, but you've also got options from Providence now. They're done. Okay. Their season is over. Put Mark McLaughlin or Anton Bleed in the damn lineup, or I'm not going to be happy.
Like, well, that was going to be my next question. If you were to make any changes, what would they be?
Look, I want Foligno out of the lineup, but they're not going to do it. They would have done it already. They're not going to do it. Yep. And Foligno has had moments where he's been okay, but he's
not. Fourth line, I don't think it's been bad. I mean, they've been what they are. They're a fourth line. Like,
you need to make the change if you feel like somebody can give you more than Foligno can, because if you're looking at the game and you're like, Nick Foligno is a huge contributor right now, if you're Bruce Cassidy, you're lying to yourself. It sucks to have to bench a guy like that, but you should, because your season is on the line.
Yeah.
If I'm putting this lineup together, it's Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak, Hall, Holla, DeBrusk, or Smith, if you want to try and wake up Smith with Hall and Holla. And then you put the fourth line together based on whatever you do with that out of the decision. With, you know, in this case, you might have to put Anton Bleed on the third line. Like, honestly, it's better than Nosek or Foligno, or you put Frederick back in over Bleed, or you put Frederick.
That's what I've seen. I've seen people argue for Frederick back in. Put
Frederick.
He's a dumb penalty waiting to happen.
Frederick, Coyle, Wagner, and try and have a puck possession physical third line. I wouldn't hate that, but there's no perfect option.
No.
And, you know, I think Wagner should stay in the lineup. I want to see Bleed. I want to see McLaughlin. The most realistic look I think we see is Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak, Hall, Holla, DeBrusk. I want to say Frederick coming back in the lineup would be good, but I just kind of don't see it happening. But
with how the series is gone, we just talked about officialing. Like, do you trust Frederick to not take a stupid penalty or two in a must-win game? Okay.
Because if he doesn't get the wake-up call at this point, like, I don't know what's up with him. But
so you have more faith in him than I do.
The message. I think Trent Frederick's got the message. If he hasn't, that's kind of baffling.
That's bad.
But I want to see Anton Bleed in there, or Trent Frederick, or Mark McLaughlin, some sort of combination. I want to see Wagner still in the lineup. I want to see Lazar still in the lineup. Love Lazar. I like what Wagner's brought enough to keep him in the lineup. But I'm not leaning towards him taking Foligno out. I'm kind of 50-50 on Grizzlick. But just, you know, I'm talking about giving the ideal lineup, but there just isn't like a clear-cut one I have. Just give me something different up front. Give me something different up front. Give me someone who wants to. Give me someone who's more likely than not going to give you more. Anton Bleed will seek to hit 30 people if he is out there and set a record. Like,
better hope. You got to do something.
Anton Bleed has been very patient. Like, very, very patient, not just this year. He's been in the organization since 2013. Like,
I didn't think it was that long. Shot.
I can't say kid at this point because, you know, he's not a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But it just happens. Antoine Bleed deserves to be in the lineup. Mar McLaughlin deserves to be in the lineup. What he's given you and what mm-hmm. you've signed him for. You give these guys opportunities. This is an opportunity. You might want to give Mar McLaughlin a shot. Because guess what, too? He scores at home.
I was going to say the home.
You want depth scoring?
Home arena factor. That's
only scored goals at home.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't, that's what I mean. It wouldn't hurt. I mean, we started this talking about Grzyk and the fact that, and you brought up the point that, like, you kind of have to do something because you'd be kicking yourself if you lose the series in 6 or 7 and if you didn't make a change. And then maybe, again, if those Bruce Cassidy things are real, then I think maybe people will have an argument for, oh, he didn't make any changes. You know, you should fire him, stuff like that. I think, he, like I said, you're playing for one game right now. You have to win this game
you're
tomorrow night.
One game.
Like, you're, guaranteed yep, you're not one guaranteed more game tomorrow.
Than Patrice Bergeron.
Yeah, that's the perfect way to look at it, in all honesty. If you really want to scare the shit out of some people.
Don't like, look, dude, Foligno knows what's up with Bergeron. He knows there's a chance. Bergeron mm-hmm. swayed him to come to the Bruins, to yep. not go to Minnesota.
Yeah, if there's anybody that would know.
To come
yeah.
out of the lineup to help this team win. It'll suck for him a little bit, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been around, dude. He knows who he is. You know, I'm sure he'd love to be better. I'm sure he knows
a little bit. I think he knows what he is at this point, absolutely.
He knows what he is.
Mm-hmm.
He will understand. Take him out of the lineup. Put Anton Bleed in. Put Mar McLaughlin. Frederick. Some sort of combination of those guys, like I said.
You got to do something.
Make the decision you need to on Grzyk. Because mm-hmm. if you have faith in Matt Grzyk and it doesn't end up working out for you, you are going to regret it. So if you need to make a tough decision or multiple tough decisions, do it. You made a somewhat tough decision in net. You know, were you going to put Allmark back in or play Swayman? And they made the right decision in my
opinion. I think, yep, right call, yep.
Because I don't love putting Allmark back in that situation. I didn't like putting Lindholm in the situation in game 5, which I'm glad they didn't do. McAvoy mm-hmm. coming back was fine because he was good enough to. Out of nowhere, in a way. Just make changes.
You have back. To. You it's don't want to regret clear it. As that. You have to. You
don't want to regret it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to. Because in this case, I love Bruce Cassidy, but if this gets screwed up, his seat's going to be as hot as it's ever been.
I
think he should be fired? Like I said, no.
Nope.
No. Regardless of what happens, unless something completely egregious happens on his, you know, with him taking the bargain.
Mm-hmm. So I guess my final question is what do you
make it happen?
Do you see this going 7? Do you see this ending tomorrow night? How are you feeling about this team heading into game 6? You think it's going 7? There, like I said, the take I have is going to piss a lot of people off, but there's a small sliver of me that, like, not hopes that they lose in 6, but, like, I just, if they win, I don't want to sit there knowing how they've played the 3 games in Carolina so far, knowing that they've been absolutely done. Like, I don't want to see this team go out like that in game 7. Like, again, that they don't show. And maybe, you know, they finally turn the corner. But what have they shown you in these 3 games in Carolina that makes you think that they have what it takes to, you know, just all of a sudden turn it on in a hostile environment? I mean, they 3 games, you saw them get down 1 goal and it seemed like the building caved in on them. So, like, I just don't want to have to sit here. And, again, anything can happen in game 7, which is the argument you'll hear everybody talk about, because it's true. But I don't know. It's just – I just don't feel great about this team in a must-win game. Like –
I hate to do this, but I'm going Carolina at 7.
Okay. If it goes 7, I would have to agree with you. But, like, I think whoever won last night was going to win this series. So I just don't know if the Bruins have what it takes to get back into this. I mean, it kind of contradicts what I just said, that, you know, they played well at home. So you would have to think they would be able to step up. But I don't know. Was last night as crushing as the defeat as maybe it seems that it was? That, like I said, you get McAvoy back and arguably you have one of your worst performances of the series, if not the worst. Like, it's tough. Maybe Lindholm gives them the boost they need. What'd you say?
Yeah, like, you don't have Lindholm and McAvoy and you win in game 4. Like,
and they play their best game. Yeah, absolutely. And then
it's strange. I don't have a good feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be really hard to win 2 more games against this team.
That's what I mean.
You might steal one, but you're going to need a practically spotless game unless
mm-hmm.
Carolina somehow collapses.
Yep. You're going to need Swayman if you get to 7 to stand on his head.
You're going to need Swayman again, to stand on his head. Panthers just scored again. Yeah, man, there's a lot at stake, and I mean, I can't help but go back to this. Could be Bergeron's last series as a Bruin, and I mean,
that is tough to think about. That's that, very doom and gloom.
That kills me inside. Mm-hmm. Like,
how can it not?
That is going to be the worst day when he announces his retirement, because the Bruins are going to suck. They're going to take a visible step down. But
I think so. We'll you don't have a true first line center,
but we might be starting to talk about the offseason next episode. And right now, I don't feel good about it.
It would not be great.
I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But it's just, it's not boding well. The trends of the series don't have me feeling good right now.
Nope.
I can't just pick the Bruins every time. I can't do it.
And that would be the homer thing to do when you're not fully a homer.
Yeah. This,
like,
this
you live in the realm of logic and like the eye test, and things have not been good in one arena and they've been good in the other. And game seven happens to be, you know,
be wrong. I would absolutely love to be wrong. Believe me. Sounds obvious, but I would. My God. You need Grizzly to step up. You need Smith to step up. You need Hall to step up. You need just a group effort, and you need to try and just pull this out as best you can.
Yep.
Just
you got to steal one there.
Leave it all out there, because this might be the last time you're in the playoffs for a while.
Which would be tough. Maybe.
If they lose Bergeron, they're just, I see it being really tough. I see it being a massive thing to overcome, because Patrice Bergeron has been here for so long and has been so dominant. You don't recover from that in a season. You just don't. You might not recover from it in two. So win, extend his career. Maybe, hopefully he stays. Just play like everything's on the line, because it is. Dig deep, bear down, and just get it
figures
done.
It out.
Just get it done, because you can. It looks tough, but you can do it. They can. I know they can, but right now, like I've said, I just don't feel great about it. We'll see what happens, though. Hopefully we have a positive show to talk
Hold
about.
Out hope. Yep.
Hold on, hope. Other notes before we segue into basketball as the Celtics wrap things up a little bit. Missed this from last week, but Brett Harrison joined the Providence Bruins sometime after Oshawa was eliminated by Shane Wright and the Kingston Frontenacs in the OHL playoffs. So cool to see for him. One of the Bruins' top prospects, but figured I just I didn't see it in time last week. Patrick Marleau retires from the NHL after 1,779 career games, the most all time, 23 seasons. Incredible career, classy guy.
They come back just to round that number out. Yeah. It's bugging me.
What's that?
I said you should come back for one more game just to round that number out. That's bugging me.
Or just play 21 more.
Or that, yep.
That was
sorry. The
worst. I'm sorry about that. Thoughts on the Celtics Bucks. We'll get to that in a little bit. Just wrapping up hockey here. We'll talk about Celtics and Bucks, so stay tuned for that. But Patrick Marleau, like, best luck to him. He's got, you know, a family, and he's finally taken some time off permanently, of course, with his retirement, to spend some time with his family. I really have nothing negative to say.
I don't know how you could. He's one of the pros, I feel like.
Pro, all-time leading games played, leader in the NHL, class act guy. Very loyal to the San Jose Sharks for a long time there. I have to have a lot of respect for him, and I do. Congratulations to him. Once they announced like 3 or 4 days ago that there were, you know, there was going to be a press conference in the near future, I mean, there was really nothing to speculate on besides retirement. Best of luck to Patrick Marleau. A guy that made a lot of history in the NHL. But, you know, he got to retire at some point, and I'm happy for him. Hopefully, you know, he enjoys retirement with his family and friends and stuff. So NHL awards finalists were announced. The Norris Trophy, Makar, Josi, Hedman. I'm picking Roman Josi. You are picking
Kale Makar.
I'm going Josi because of the ridiculous stretch he went on, willing the Nashville Predators to the playoffs. One of the best seasons we've had seen a defenseman have in terms of offense, in terms of like pure domination in a long time. Kale Makar is a great case, and you know, if it was a playoff award too, it'd be Kale McCarr's award to lose with how insanely good he's been. But it'd be Josi's second Norris of his career. Last one he won was in 2020. He won't win the Hart, but I could realistically see him getting first place Hart Trophy votes for how much he willed the Nashville Predators to get into the playoffs. Unfortunately, losing in four games, but to the Avalanche. But that doesn't matter. It's a regular season award. I'm going Josi. I could see Makar getting it. I don't think it's Hedman's year. He won last year, but this year he's not going to repeat. It's Yossi and Makar, and it's Yossi for me, but Makar also has a very, very sturdy case, so it'll be interesting to see who wins. Interesting to see the voter breakdown. Very curious to see that. The Vezina, Igor Shesterkin, UC Saros, and Jacob Markstrom. I'm going Shesterkin, so is Ryan. Yep. It's easy. He's had one of the best goalie seasons of our lifetime. Freddie Anderson on here, Jack Campbell on here. Anybody who actually thinks Jack Campbell should be in here is an idiot. I like Jack Campbell. I do, but he was injured for a lot of the season.
Plain and simple.
He was not good enough to, you know, stack up to these guys. He just wasn't. If you know, you're probably just an idiot, bias Leafs fans for saying that. Saros missed some time too. You know, there's no doubting that, but Saros had a better case. He's another guy that just absolutely carried the Predators as much as he could. A stud, one of the best goalies in the world. Shesterkin, I mean, we talked about him. Markstrom led the league in shutouts. Was a huge reason for the Flames' success. He had 9 shutouts, which is ridiculous. Been a really good fit there. You know, good leader, I'm sure, for former Bruin Dan Vladar, who, you know, kind of tailed off after a hot start to the season for him, but still a young goalie. I think he'll figure things out. But he might have some competition next year with Dustin Wolf winning goaltender of the year in the AHL. So that's a tough spot for Vladar to be in, but some healthy competition next year for the Flames. It'll be interesting to monitor. It's just darker for me, though. He played absolutely absurd.
Clear cut, yeah.
Definitely struggling in the playoffs, but this is a guy, same situation as Yossi. I could see some hard trophy votes for, maybe a first place or two. I think he's a legit case for the hard trophy. Will he win it? Probably not. I think Austin Matthews will win it. McDavid has a good chance, but right now I'd pick Matthews to win the Hart, but we don't have the official finals yet there. Any additional comments on the Vezina from you?
Well, the one thing I was going to say is, like you kind of mentioned with Yossi, kind of willing Nashville to the playoffs. If you count the playoffs, which obviously they don't, like you could very well make a case for Saros in that sense. Cause I didn't really follow that series, but I'm assuming he didn't play any of those 4 games they got swept in. So that would be a phenomenal case for him then, kind of like you said, going hand in hand with Yossi carrying that team. But it's clear cut for me, Shesterkin. Like you said, he's been the best goalie all season. Like you said, a talent that we really haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah, and, you know, Shesterkin plays on a team that struggles at 5-on-5, too. That's makes it a little tougher on a goalie when you have the Predators, who surprised people this year, but, you know, Saros definitely willed them to a lot of wins this year. Markstrom has a fantastic defensive and offensive team in front of him, so I think that'll hurt his case a little bit. It's Shesterkin for me all day, and I'd even strongly consider Shesterkin to win the Hart Trophy this year. He was amazing, like just absolutely stellar. Calder Trophy, Moritz Seider, Trevor Zegras, and Michael Bunting. It's Moritz Seider for me. He was called upon. His draft pick when he was drafted was considered a reach, but, you know, to some people there was reason to believe it could be a good pick. It has been. Moritz Seider, he's big, he's strong, he's assertive, he's not shy at all. He's got a good personality off the ice. I love some of the off-ice content they do with him and Lucas Raymond and Joe Valeno. He's a stud. He's a face for the league in the future. He's had a phenomenal start to his career. He was tasked to do a lot in Detroit, and he did. You know, Moritz Seider could have put up 100 points this year, and that team wasn't getting in the playoffs. He's a fantastic defenseman. He'll be in the mix for Norris trophies, but like kind of like the argument with Charlie McAvoy presented by Foolish Ozawa this week. It's going to be tough for some of these top defensemen to win Norris trophies because there are so many good ones.
So many good defensemen,
You know, there are drawbacks to certain players, too. You know, Moritz Seider and Charlie McAvoy are fantastic defensemen, but it's an award that's largely based on points. And Seider and McAvoy don't put up as much points as Yossi, Hedman, and Makar, and Adam Fox. So that's just something to monitor. I think they should change the criteria of the trophy personally, maybe make 2 top defenseman awards, but you know, we'll see if that happens. Seider would be the third defenseman rather since 2012 to win the Calder, with Kale McCarr in 2020 and Aaron Ekblad in 2015 being the other two. I'm fine with these finalists, but it's Seider for me all day.
Okay.
It's Seider for me all day. You know, Zegras played in a tough situation too and had a phenomenal year. We saw highlight reel plays, but I think being a number one defenseman is a little tougher than what Zegras did. Michael Bunting's production is largely because of Austin Matthews. And, you know, I'm not one of the guys that's going to die on the hill of him being so much older than these guys, but what was it today? I saw he's like 16 days younger than Nathan MacKinnon, who was drafted in 2014.
God, what the hell? I didn't know that.
What was the tweet? I got to find it now. Yeah, man, I don't know. I just think having Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner playing with you a lot and playing on the top power play helps.
Mm-hmm. Which so is why I think he'll win it.
Yeah, 2014 called the winner. This is from Cam Robinson on Twitter. Nathan MacKinnon, born September 1st, 1995. Michael Bunting, 2022 Calder finalist, September 17th, 1995. Oh, it's Mo Sider all day. It's Mo Sider all day to me.
This is the one I knew the least about, so I just kind of went off of stats.
Would I be surprised if Bunting won? No, but no. I don't think he should be. I don't think he should win.
Fair enough.
Give it to Sider or Zegras before Bunting. I think Bunting should be the third. If I were pulling a top three, I'd put friggin' Lucas Raymond over him. I'd put maybe Jeremy Swayman over him.
Because yeah, Swayman's a solid one.
I think what they've had to do is tougher than what Bunting has been given in Toronto, playing prime minutes, feeding, you know, Matthews and Marner at times, but also, you know, getting the benefit of playing with them. It's Sider all day for me. NHL draft lottery took place last night. The third time the Devils will pick in the top two in the last 6 years. They also drafted fourth and seventh in their respectively in the last 2 years. They have great lottery luck. Montreal gets the number one pick, likely to land Shane Wright, but we'll see what happens. New Jersey could trade the pick. Tom Fitzgerald, GM of the Devils, has mentioned their willingness to potentially move their first round pick. Makes sense. You know, they can't just take top picks every year. It might be time to move a prime pick for some prime assets. I'm looking at the Vancouver Canucks, maybe looking at JT Miller for them to trade for, Brock Besser, Luke Hughes, if you want to get crazy and get all the three three Hughes brothers in one organization, which would be completely bonkerville.
That'd be insane.
For the league. They're all fantastic players. Luke is going to be the next one. He is so, so ridiculously good going back to Michigan for his sophomore year, though. Smartly so, like his brother did, like Zach Werenski did at Michigan, like Kale McCarr did at UMass, and those guys are doing pretty good. Look, I think New Jersey should trade the pick. I think they should hit up, you know, they've got some history a long time ago with trading high-profile assets with the Canucks, with the Corey Schneider trade that led to the pick to Vancouver that led to Bo Horvat. Maybe they can make another stunner. Or maybe they trade down and go for one of the top right shot defensemen like Simon Nemich, still don't know how to say the name perfectly, or David Yurecek, who is recovering from a torn ACL but is a big mobile defenseman with a booming shot. As Damon Severson isn't a guaranteed long-term Devil, maybe they decide to trade back and see if they can lock up one of those guys. They got a lot of options. They could get Logan Cooley and make him a top six winger with Jack Hughes. That would work pretty good. Logan Cooley is arguably the most dynamic player in the class. They have options. Shane Wright to the Canadiens seems too easy, though. He's a Canadian kid. There's been fans campaigning for him all year. There's been fans showing up to his games with Canadian Shane Wright's jerseys. Shane Wright jerseys. It seems like it's going to happen. Jeff Merrick, though, from Sportsnet and the 32 Thoughts podcast, Elliot Friedman, suggested a nuclear hypothetical on the 32 Thoughts podcast of Montreal trading the first overall pick to Arizona for the third pick and Arizona's 2023 first-round pick. This would be one of the craziest trades of all time. That and knowing Arizona with their bad lottery luck, that would be the year that they get number one, and in this case they would miss out on Connor Bedard, who is seen by most as the next Connor McDavid. He's going to be a legit monster. He is so ridiculously good. And the thing for Arizona that's funny, too, is they don't have good luck at the third overall spot. Dylan Strome did not work out drafting him third overall. And Kyle Turris didn't end up working out long-term either when they took him back in the day. So, you know, maybe Arizona bucks the trend. Maybe they decide to trade. But that trade, you know, it is hypothetical, so it's just for fun. That would be crazy if Arizona were to end up winning the lottery next year and screw themselves there. It would be prime Coyotes as well with all the shit shows going on in that area and that organization, their college rank they play out of. But yeah, the draft lottery, New Jersey gets very blessed again. As a result, Arizona moves down to three, Seattle to four, so on and so forth. Going to be an interesting draft, but that's a discussion for late June and early July. But just to recap the draft lottery, for anyone who might not have seen it, it was interesting, and we'll see what happens there. But any final hockey thoughts for you, my friend?
Not that I can think of. Nope.
Nope. On to Celtics then, as they are wrapping up game five.
They might not be. Yeah, this is a little too close for comfort. I think it's fitting because we were going to start with obviously game three and Milwaukee almost blowing their double-digit point lead. Now the Celtics, I think we're up at 8 at one point. If I was, you know, trying to glance up at this, we were doing the Bruins stuff. They're now up 2 with 24 seconds to go. Like, it's a little too close for comfort. We'll try to keep an eye on that. Just kind of give us some thoughts, though, on the games 3 and 4 performances. Of course, game 3, the Bucks take 103-101. Celtics, once again, did not shoot the ball great in that game until the fourth quarter. You know, obviously, Al Horford, and again, not to say, you know, he made up for his miss in game 3 in his game 4 performance, but tough at the end of that game. You know, a split second sooner, you would have had another great Al Horford performance where he hits the buzzer beater Celtics. You know, just the fact that they were in that game at the end with how poorly they played. You know, they shot 50% from the field in the fourth quarter on both field goals and three-pointers, 11-12 and 4-8. It kind of, you know, turned up the intensity in the fourth quarter. To put that in perspective, you know, they shot 36.8 from the field for the entire game and 27.3% from deep. Jason Tatum had, I think they said it was the second worst shooting game of his postseason career. He finishes with 10 points of 14 or 4 of 19. Would have been nice if he shot 14 of 19 in that game. Was 0 of 6 from deep. So, you know, nothing really could go right for the Celtics in that game. And the fact that they were still in it, the fact that they were able to come back, Jaylen Brown played well. Al Horford had one of his, continued to have one of his better games. Obviously, a prelude to what he did in game 4. I think just kind of showed off through the fight for the Celtics. I think one, you know, big takeaway from game 3, maybe a confidence booster for a guy like Derek White. He had a solid game in that one, 14 points on 50% from the field, 66% from deep, and 75% from the line. We kind of crapped on him in the Brooklyn series, rightfully so, because he was not good in that series. The Milwaukee one's kind of been a turnaround. He's averaging 8.8 points in the Milwaukee series compared to the Brooklyn series, which he shot or scored 5.3 points. His shooting's up from the field and from deep. Shot a whopping 9.1% from deep in the Brooklyn series. That's up to 38.5 going in tonight. So that was one positive takeaway, I guess, from that game. But, you know, not a great performance from the Celtics. Again, I say watching that game sitting there, you know, I said on Twitter, I think it was, you know, I just wanted to see some fight out of that team. First game on the road in this series, you know, just fight, try to come back in it, make it respectable. And the fact that they almost won, I think just kind of shows, you know, the toughness the Celtics have been playing with in these playoffs, because we've said it before. You know, they get down big like they did in that game, especially the third quarter. They were horrendous. Milwaukee outscored them 34-17. Again, early season Celtics, they would have probably wilted in that, just given up, packed up, and, you know, headed for game 4. But the fact that they fought back, you know, took Milwaukee's punch again, kind of been the story of the playoffs. You know, you take a punch from one team, you know, give it right back. The fact that they were able to come back and outscore Milwaukee 34-23 in the fourth and show you something, I thought was really good. Obviously, a tough loss the way it ended. But like I said, to show some fight in that game was nice.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just an important game as well. So to see them not just wilter or wilt away, whatever the word is, I'm drawing a blank on it.
Yeah, either one.
You know, you said was good, but I mean, game 4 was definitely better.
The better of the two.
Kind of segue into that.
Mm-hmm. The other game 3 thing I really didn't factor in is I think you kind of saw the story of this series and what has happened now tonight with Milwaukee taking a 1-point lead with 11 seconds left, that Bobby freaking Portis just hit a shot of all people. You saw in game 3, you know, Giannis has had a pretty solid series all around. You finally saw a little bit of help from Jrue Holiday for Giannis. He scored 42. Jrue Holiday scored 25. They both shot the ball 30 times, which is ridiculous. You kind of think of that more so as, you know, Giannis type of number than Jrue Holiday.
Speaking of Bobby Portis.
Well, that's what I mean. He just hit that. Again, Celtics can't get a defensive rebound, and he hits a layup. At least he'll have the last shot, though. But yeah, I thought, you know, game 3 and especially game 4 that we'll get into in a second was kind of the microcosm of, you know, how Milwaukee will win or lose this series. And again, how they might win this game tonight is Giannis, like, if he gets some help, they're going to win. If he doesn't, and of course in game 3, Jason Tatum has a historically bad shooting performance, if Giannis has to run the show themselves, which pretty much happened in game 4, like the Bucks are going to lose. The Celtics are a better all-around team, but just kind of, you know, that I found that a little interesting that finally Jrue Holiday gets some help, and or rather Giannis gets some help from Jrue Holiday. And you really saw for the first time too since game 1, the Celtics really didn't have an answer for Giannis throughout this game. I mean, 42 points, shot the ball 30 times. Like I said, 53% from the field. He was excellent in that game. Wasn't as big as a passer, obviously, as he was in game one, but just unstoppable. And again, we talked about the officiating. Game three was a little ticky-tacky with some of the stuff he was able to get to the free throw line at times. But like, that's the Giannis experience at that point, or at this point, like that's what he's going to do. So kind of discouraging there, but it's kind of one of those, what can you do things?
What can you do?
Yep.
I mean, Al Horford in game four too, man. Like, this guy
turning back the clock and has been their best player all playoffs.
Getting the praise from Marcus Smart, which was really cool on social media, rightfully so. Still don't know about the green hair from Marcus Smart.
Mm-hmm. He just lost in the game, I think.
Yeah.
Trying to take on Drew Holiday one-on-one. He turned back into old-time Marcus Smart there, it looked like. Let's see. Yeah, I'll take on Pat Connaughton.
Oh, man. This is the stuff, you know, and I hope there aren't any Celtics fans that are going to get too mad at me about this, but, like, this is the stuff Marcus Smart just can't do, especially in a game. Like,
yep.
You don't have a lot of time, so I understand here. And, you know, you don't want to end up holding on the ball for too long and screwing your team over. But I don't know. It's just a tough situation. And, you know, ideally, if you're Marcus Smart, hope to have a better lane to the basket there. But Drew Holiday was having none of it. So not the Canadian province, but
no.
None of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, that's tough. I mean, 6.6 seconds left on the clock here. That's a pretty wild stat that opponents are shooting 33% of the field on shots defended by Drew Holiday. That's best of anyone in the playoffs. Wouldn't have guessed that.
I would not have. No, I mean, he's a solid defender.
Holiday's really good, man. Like, he really, really is, and it's been huge for them with Middleton not being around.
Mm-hmm. He's been the next guy. It's
that the best left? Like, I wouldn't guess that. No,
God, mm-hmm.
But no. I mean, I said it earlier with the Bruins, Celtics got to dig deep and bear down here. And I mean, this is the most pivotal moment of the season right here. This is it.
Final 6 seconds, they can foul and obviously get the ball back. Hopefully only down, what would it be, three? So you'd have a chance for a 3-point play to send it to over a 3-point to send it to overtime. But yeah, like I said, I mean, looking at the box score right now, Giannis has 40, Drew Holiday has 24. Bobby Portis has 14. Connaughton's got 11. So Milwaukee, again, for the second game in a row, the last three, have gotten some contributions outside of Giannis, which was, like I said, I was fine with that if Giannis was going to get his 40 in the series to start, but you had to limit other guys. They apparently haven't really done that tonight, which kind of sucks. But for more positive, I mean, like you said, back on the Al Horford stuff, to see what he was able to do, I mean, the game he put on, the dunk on Giannis especially, I thought, and everybody has had the same thought now, it really energized the Celtics as a whole. This was from Tony Maserati, just in the fourth quarter alone. I'll get to the, you know, post-dunk stuff from Horford in a second. But from Maz, he said, in the fourth quarter last night, Jason Tatum, 5 of 6, Al Horford, 6 of 6, and Marcus Smart, 4 of 5, with 15 of 17, including 4 of 4 from three-point distance. They combined for 37 points. If you want to take that further and go, because again, the first three quarters of that game in game four, the Celtics kind of looked like they were going through the motions, you know, weren't really playing all that great. Hold on, my computer just effed up and reloaded the page. So give me a second to get back to it. Unless you have it there, the stats from the fourth. Oh, I got it. Never mind. Came back up. Yeah, that fourth quarter, or after, sorry, post-dunk, they shoot 87.5% from the field, 14 to 16, like Maz said. Horford has 14 points, 5 of 5. He was perfect after that. Jason Tatum has 12, 5 of 6. Smart finished with 6, 3 of 3 from the quarter. You're shaking your head. Milwaukee just did what? Drained a 3 to end the game? Or the Celtics missed a 2? I was looking down at trying to read the stats off. What's the finish? Smart.
Turnover.
Oh, really? Great. Tatum was wide open on that play, too.
Smart inbounded looking at it now. Horford back to Smart and turnover game.
Hey, triple team Smart. What are you expecting? All right, that's a rough way to lose that game. Now I kind of don't feel great about going to Milwaukee down 3-2. Mm-hmm. Not great. So we thought we were going to end the night on a positive with, you know, after some down Bruin stuff, but now some Celtics stuff that's kind of been a fluid situation. It's a rough way to lose that game. I mean, on the positive side, I mean, you would expect the Celtics to going now into game 6 and a must win would think they can bounce back. The fact that, you know, it's Marcus Smart twice on the last two plays turning the ball over is not going to be a great look for a lot of people. Brown was open. Horford was open.
Giannis with 43 and 11.
Well, he dominated again tonight. Like
and
I said, he
16
finally got some help
on the field. 16 and 27. That's like,
that's easy for him.
That's what 18 and 27 is 66. So that's like around 60, 58%. I'd say
if my phone would load, I could get you the number, but it won't show me the box score.
That's not good.
No, it is not.
Not good. Well,
so now they have to go into Milwaukee. I mean, like we were getting to, I mean, they showed they can win on the road. They showed, you know, they can show some toughness on the road, but like you need to have now more of that.
Hopefully Rob Williams back.
Yeah. Not having Rob Williams for the second night in a row, that
it hurt more.
Tonight. Hurt them. I mean, Tice had a good game. I looked at the box score a second ago and he had 11 points in the fourth quarter. So, or going into the fourth quarter. So, I mean, he wasn't terrible, as bad as he's kind of been in this series, but yeah, now more so than ever, you definitely need Rob Williams back for game six. Like this is not, not great.
You wanted that to look better for the Celtics at the end. Mm-hmm. It just didn't add up. I mean, like you said, Tatum is, you watched the replay here.
He is wide open on that play on the right-hand side of the court.
Yeah, if they do it better, they may find a better lane to get the pass to him. Smart doesn't have a great lane to make the pass there, given mm-hmm. the situation, given where Tatum is on the opposite side of the court. And the Bucks win. I mean, like, credit to them. It's not just like, you know, a screw up at points by the Celtics or, you know.
Oh, yeah, they played.
It's Milwaukee just being ready.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Like I said, it's going to go – that was kind of what I was going to talk about is game four, Giannis didn't get a ton of help. Game five, he does. Looking at the box score, like I said, Giannis 40 points, Drew Holiday 24, Bobby Portis 14, Pat Connaughton 13.
Yeah, like, this is what you wanted to avoid if you're the Celtics, but at the same absolutely. Time, it was a tall task to do it as much as you would have liked to win the series. You know, there were going to be times – almost undoubtedly where this was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it happens in game five, a very pivotal game.
It's not like he didn't get.
But like if, you know, if we know anything about the Celtics team and how resilient they've been, you know, how they've stepped up in big moments. You know, we've seen what they did when they lost Smart and they stepped up and Jaylen Brown went off that game. Mm-hmm. We didn't get that type of performance tonight with Rob Williams still out, but you know, we've seen this team rally. So I'm a little down right now, but I'm not out on the Celtics at all. Like,
mm-hmm. No, I think they absolutely think they can go into Milwaukee and win. Now it's just mm-hmm. more difficult and a must-win yeah. situation.
It's more difficult, but it, you know, it gives some fire to them too, which hopefully mm-hmm. they can channel properly because they can use this the right way and ideally win comfortably. I'm not going to say they're going to go in there and blow the doors off Milwaukee, but mm-hmm. if they channel this the right way and execute and, you know, change things up a little bit, they can win comfortably. They can, you know, make this a game in game six where it's not super close at the end, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit more breathing room and go from there for game seven at home.
Yeah.
Which would be beautiful. I like it. I don't like it, you know, primarily, but I like it more so.
Not the ideal way of doing it, but
if the yeah. roles were flipped mm-hmm. and Milwaukee was at home for game seven.
Yeah, absolutely. It's totally different story in that case, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, like I said, yeah, I'm just trying to get an idea of what the hell happened in this game. Like, you finally got your, it seemed like kind of, I mean, Tatum was 2 for 11 from deep. So that's not great. But he had 34 points. Like you kind of finally had your big breakout Tatum game for that degree. Jaylen Brown complimented him with 26. Smart had 15. That's not terrible. Tice off the bench was perfect. He went 5 of 5 with hit 1 3 and had 11 points. Derek White was 4 of 5. He had 9 points. Pritchard factored in 4. He was 2 of 3. They didn't shoot the ball bad. They shot 51% from the field.
Just sounds like a defensive issue.
Just that, yeah. I mean, Milwaukee was more balanced. They were 43.5 from the field, 44.8 from. That's what it was. They shot 40, just under 49, 45% from deep, 13 to 29.
They shoot. Do they shoot a lot of threes?
They had 29. Milwaukee. They went 13 of 29 from deep. The Celtics went 10 of 31. So there's your difference right there.
Yeah, GG. You're not winning a game like
no,
that.
No, they got it. Horford only had 8 points.
Perfect everywhere else.
They need to get Rob Williams back. Grant starting again, finished with 0 points. 0 of 3 from the field, 0 of 2 from deep, 31 minutes, 1 assist, 2 rebounds, 2 turnovers, no
Grant
points.
Williams you're talking about?
Yes. Minus 11.
Vengeance.
Yeah, you're going to need that in game six. But Vengeance. You need to.
Sorry, headphone users.
It's okay. That's why I wouldn't. I wouldn't start Tice necessarily, but like Grant Williams is, especially if Rob Williams can't go, like Grant Williams has been a better player off the bench than he has been starting. So like you might look to switch something up there if Rob can't go, but
worth considering at least.
Yikes. It's excuse me. That's not great. You need something out of Grant Williams. Gives you 4 points. You win the game. Like he hits 1-3. You're right there. Game's in overtime. Horford had 8, so they locked down Horford after what we were going to talk about was a phenomenal, just all-around great performance from him. Because, I mean, like we said right before we were trying to break down that last play, or last two plays, like his fourth-quarter performance energized the team in game 4, which was great to see. I thought – my whole thing was I thought, you know, you finally saw some fight and some, you know, not back down from Giannis in that game. There were a couple of times. Obviously, the Horford talked about it in the postgame, taking the mean mug from Giannis to heart. You know, think of the Michael Jordan meme where, you know, I took that personally. That's what it was. He did. I mean, the fact that he was able to return the favor and drive on Giannis, dunk on him, you know, scream. I've never seen Al Horford that fired up about anything in his NBA career. It was, phenomenal. But then, like, everybody else around that, like, you saw the Smart interaction with Giannis where, you know, he tried to help him up. And then after Giannis kind of gave him the boot, Smart was like, you know what, F you, I'm not going to help you up.
Yeah.
The thing with Brown. Giannis, I think, fouled him hard, which for the second time now in the series, Giannis has fouled a guy on a clear dunk and has not that I want to sound like I'm bitching and complaining, but like maybe something to keep an eye on. You know, you saw the Tatum dunk in game 3 that he fouled him on. No, you know, clear path to blocking that ball. Same thing happened with Brown. Giannis tried to come over and consult him and Brown get off me with the shoulder. So I like that in game 4. You finally saw some like we're not going to, you know, be afraid of Giannis. We're just going to basically say F you to this team. Like we're done with how he's being treated and we're going to fight back. So that was nice to see. Again, trying to keep an eye on the game and do this. It didn't really seem like there was a ton of that. I might be wrong. So if anybody's listening and that was, you know, they did kind of have some chippy moments and I apologize, but like, I don't know, like I kind of wanted to see a little more of that than what I did. You would have thought maybe you would have, because like I said, I thought they maybe finally turned a corner. The fact that, you know, 35-year-old Al Horford finally got him to say, you know, we're not going to back down. Not that, you know, they were backing down from Giannis at any point, but I just thought after that dunk, it really seemed like all those things kind of snowballed that you saw them say, you know, we're done with how he's being treated. We're going to go right at him and we're not going to be afraid to, you know, give him any crap back that he gives us. So that was, like I said, good to see, but now you have this, you know, game not kind of end the way you want it to. I don't know how they're going to, you know, I think they'll bounce back from it, but I just don't know, you know, how they currently feel, you know, if they let one slip away, which you've got to think they have to. They gave up, I think, it was an 8-point lead at one point in the fourth quarter. Like, that's what Milwaukee had been doing. And that was what, you know, I thought was something good about the Celtics too, is, you know, they were able to come back from these deficits and Milwaukee was struggling to close them out, especially at home. Now, you know, Milwaukee's able to come in and, you know, kind of do the same thing the Celtics did to them on the road. That's a huge win for them. And again, they have all the momentum now going back to Milwaukee.
Yep. Just got to capitalize, dig deep there down.
Yep. Got to get something from somebody not named Tatum and Brown. Now it's funny that they finally have their big game and their big games and you kind of have some guys go by the wayside. Like, I'm not going to dump on Al Horford for only scoring 8 points. Like, you're not going to get Al Horford to drop 30 or whatever it was in game 4, the mid-20s. Like, but you got to get more than 8. Like, Milwaukee made it, I guess, knowing that they were going to go after Al Horford in this game and shut him down, and they did. So kudos to them. Like, I don't want to take anything away from Milwaukee's performance tonight because obviously they did what they needed to do. But if you're the Celtics, you see that, you know, Al Horford doesn't have, you know, his best night. You got to have other guys step up around him. And again, go back to the fact that Grant Williams has a goose egg sitting in the box score right now. That hurts. That hurts a lot.
Yeah, that can't happen. Like, I mean, yep. Like, especially it's a 3-point game. You get a few points from Grant Williams, maybe it's different. Yep.
And exactly. He scores, he hits 1-3 that he took. Like, yeah. I said, 0-3 from the field, 0-2. He hits 1-3 and one other basket, and you win the game.
Game of inches, man.
Yep.
One funny thing at the end, the whole Kyrie GTA video, like him acting like he's a super tough guy when really he just makes himself look like even more of a dick. You're also playing GTA 5 in 2022. Which, like, you know, I get it. GTA 5 is fun, but it's not
that. Like, I texted you, GTA 5 is a game that friends of mine, we've played like once every 6 months. And then it gets boring very quickly. And then
maybe
touch it again. For
maybe on Flat Earth, GTA 6 is released.
And it's
GTA 6.
Yeah.
Just, you know, spin zone.
It's on the PlayStation 5 now. It's a new game out, I guess. Like, who the hell knows what works or what's going on in his brain right now?
Yeah, I mean, retire. That's all I'm gonna say. Why don't you just go? You don't want to play basketball completely. You don't want to play all the time. So why don't you just retire and become a streamer, and then, you know, just fuck off.
Yeah, just
how about that?
Go into a cave or something and leave the rest of humanity alone.
Yeah, just
please and thank you.
Maybe try and create a flat Earth. Just go off somewhere and try and build a planet. And just don't talk to anybody. Delete your social media. Don't bring your phone. You know, just, you know, see ya.
Leave everybody out of your personal life, please.
The Scrappy Cats are back in the game. The Panthers up 4-3 on the Capitals. The Rangers won, kept themselves alive.
Oh, there you go. Must win. They figured it out.
5-3 victory for them.
Bruins should call them up and try to get some pointers.
Yeah. Maybe borrow or Tony Panarin.
That'd be nice. Or Shesterkin.
Yeah, or Shesterkin or both.
Nope. Fox wouldn't be bad. Need some D help.
Don't talk to me about Adam Fox and the Bruins. I would do practically anything to have Adam Fox and Charlie Mack on the same team. Let me tell you. Flames and Stars about to start right now. Jake Ottinger looking like a Conn Smythe finalist. You know, this is a stupid discussion to pop up, but if the Stars were to pull off a Cinderella run, Jake Ottinger is 153 goals against and a 960 save percentage right now and is willing the Stars to victory. So there's some hockey stuff at the end of the show for you. We have a line of Michael Raffel, Roope Hintz, and Joe Pavelski, which is pretty goofy, but we'll see if the Flames can establish a more legitimacy here as they look to build on a 4-1 win. It's some hockey action tonight, so if you're looking for something to watch, if you don't feel like watching Warriors and Grizzlies or something, watch some hockey. There's plenty on right now.
I'm going to watch this postgame and try to figure out what the hell happened in this game.
Yeah, I'm going to see some postgame stuff as well off to the side. Get the show up, watch some hockey, and go to bed.
All right.
So thank you to everyone for listening in the live stream today. To the Canes fans that don't follow me that were somewhat not angrily in my mentions, thanks for watching. See ya. You're weird. If you're not following me, you're listening to the show because of an argument we had on Twitter. You're weird. You need therapy. Just want to reiterate that. Oh my God. Erik Branson just absolutely gobsmacked someone at center ice and hit him into his own teammate. It's a great word, isn't it? I don't even know if that makes sense there, but it's a fun word to say. And I said it. Yeah, thank you for listening. Wherever you're listening, thank you. Give us a rating if you can, wherever you're listening to, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. If you're listening on iHeartRadio or Amazon, because I forgot to look again, let us know. You can find us on the Full Press Coverage app. You can find a bunch of other Full Press content there if you want, or just on their various Twitter accounts. Go check those out. Yeah, keep listening. We've been, you know, continuing to get awesome listenership. And it's going up again, so that's good. Thank you very much.
Good to see.
The numbers have been awesome, so thank you. I'm getting so, you know, our audience has grown so much. We really do love to see that. So thank you again. Awesome international listeners, we love you wherever you're from. Unless you're a bad person, then I don't know if I could say that, but but you know, whatever. We appreciate you listening nonetheless. We'll see you next week, episode 95. Hopefully, we'll have some good stuff to talk about. Ryan, I hope you feel better.
Thank you. And I hope I do, too.
Let's just dig deep. Let's bear down because it's the Cup.
Let's hope both Boston teams are in the playoffs when we meet again.
Because it's the Cup, and I don't fear the deer. Steer the deer off the road.
Fair enough.
We'll see you next week, episode 95, another one closer to 100. Stay safe, stay healthy, be nice to people, all that good stuff. And we'll talk to you then. Peace out.